I love the Bahamas.
Yeah, I was trying to do that. No, I'm sorry.
Ken,
do you have an agenda?
Oh, no, thanks.
Which is really nice.
Too good to start. Yeah. I'd like to call the special meeting of Ways and Means to order. Let's take a rock.
Thanks. So this amendment would provide salary increases of various sizes to members of the legislative staff. Pay particular attention to the deputy clerk and fiscal analyst, which would go from $76,875 to $95,000. One thing about that salary increase that I would like to just point out for the group and for the record is we discussed yesterday, the comptroller's suggested increases, which included the deputy comptroller goes to $98,000, right, March? So that deputy comptroller, who we talked about, you know, would be a CPA and whatnot, would go to $98,000. This would put our CPA in our office at lower than that still, even with the salary increase. One of the concerns that we have is that we've paid particular attention to various other departments throughout the county for salary increases, including the DA's office, including the executive's office, and we tend to pay them, I believe, quite a bit less of a tough review than we do every time salary increases are requested for our office and our staff. I would point out, not to put Amber on the spot in front of us, because that's the fun part about this for our staff is that, you know, we sort of work in a bubble here, except when it comes to our staff and they have to sit through the meeting while we talk about it. You know, the fiscal analyst and the deputy clerk fiscal analyst who sit here are the ones who do all of the hard work all year long, keeping us in tune on the budget and then making the 40, how many budget amendments is here? 40?
There's 53.
53, right? Budget amendments. You know, researching them, writing them, et cetera. I will say that I've seen countless individuals raised above our clerk of the legislature, our department head. She always requests salary increases for her employees, but doesn't request them for herself. That's going to eventually cause some compression issues here. One of the concerns I have is that the fiscal analyst, if we didn't raise her salary, our fiscal analyst, if this went through, would be making more than her. And I think it's tough from time to time to manage people who are making more than you, which is a concern that we hear often from department heads and other elected officials. I think that all of these salary increases are justified. I think that our staff does a lot of hard work. They do it in an almost impossible circumstance where they have to work for each one of us and make each one of us feel like we're the most important, but be able to work equally on both sides of the aisle and with every legislator, including, you know, from the chair all the way down to, you know, the newest freshman legislator. It appears we need to educate people on whether or not they can speak to them. That was an interesting comment yesterday from Legislator Hewitt that he didn't even know he could talk to Vicki. So he said that yesterday. So he didn't know when he got elected if he was allowed to talk to Vicki. So we need to add that into the orientation. That's the presentation that I have on this. I think we want to take any questions, comments.
Can you go over it again? No, I'm just
kidding. It was raises for our office.
Oh, okay.
Can I do a quick question? But I feel like it's just technical. So when you just said that if this went through the deputy clerk,
if we didn't add Vicki in there, okay. Because Vicki doesn't like to give to herself.
Okay.
I fought with her about it.
Okay, I get
again,
it. Now
this
I get
year.
It. I didn't know.
This year she sort of gave in. But I think that I've been trying to put a salary increase in here for her for 5-6 years. And she always argues against me. You know, there's no one that I think works harder here than her in trying to manage personality. But yeah, so the part of my reason for the clerk's salary increase, and I think the reason she finally agreed to it this year, is because of that particular compression issue that would be created.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll.
Anybody else? That was easy.
Thank you. Commissioner Coleman.
I have a few more technical amendments to present, and I will give credit, not credit, but thanks to Natalie and Amber for finding these. We try to make the budget as best we can, and we always find some of these along the way. The First Amendment, number 26, is in social services. We put a part-time non-benefited position in regular pay, and it should be moved out into part-time pay. So this amendment shows that where it's just going from regular pay into part-time pay. There's no increase or anything like that in the total budget for social services. Is there any questions on that? The next one, 27, is there was a discrepancy in the regular pay line to the position summary of $180. So what we did is just move that $180 in the shift differential pay. Again, it was a discrepancy there. Any questions on that one? I'm saving you minutes.
Listen, you can save more by
keep going.
Amendment number 28. These are truly just discrepancies in the position summary where the other part-time pay doesn't match the general ledger. In the district attorney, it should be $30 less than that other part-time pay description. And in budget, it should have been, I think I mentioned to the committee when I met on the budget, it should have been $15,000 in other part-time pay instead of the $10,000 that we had in the position summary. I'll just keep moving on. Let's see. Amendment 29 was brought up at Ways and Means on Monday night. This is the purchasing. Ed Jordan was there mentioning how he had a principal buyer, and it showed as a buyer in the position summary. It is budgeted as a principal buyer, just the description of the position said buyer. So the amendment is just to change that to a principal buyer. The budget amount is correct. Mm-hmm. And I do have the amendment. I know it's not on the list right now, but there was an amendment, and I thank Amber for pointing this out yesterday. The federal revenue and ARP did not include the allocation of benefits. So the amendment you'll see, and I think they handed that out, is an additional $118,000 in federal revenue, and I just added it to contingency in terms of the expense. Those are the amendments that you have in front of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Legislator Nolan, are you ready?
This is an amendment to add into the budget the position that we've been talking about with the agricultural crisis relief package. That package is resolution 400 and totals $2 million. This position was originally written into the supporting budget as a $90,000 a year line. That was with the anticipation that we would hire a consultant to do this work. The sense of the legislature has been that we should have a county position and create that position. So this budget amendment would put that position into the budget, and it also increases it slightly from that original plan because $90,000 wouldn't cover salary and benefits for the position as imagined. So the salary here would run to $73,200, and the rest is the benefits to $110,268, I think it is. and the addition to bring that 90,000 up to the 110, we found within the budget we originally proposed, there was a line for $15,000 for outreach to children. Turns out that Cornell Cooperative Extension has a program designed to do exactly that. And we had an other line in terms of some of the programs to provide assistance to farmers that we hadn't defined yet. So we pulled that to put to this budget line.
Any questions? Chair Bartow? Chair Bartow? Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Quickly, so this is ARPA funded. What do we do after 2023?
My sense from the legislature is that we would like to have this position continue, and so this will become a county position.
So the funding that this position is going to be administering is ARPA funds, correct?
Yes.
And so that's, I think, you're for $1 million there, something like that?
Yes.
Right. So then this turns this 110 virtually into a $1.1 million in future budgets, or something greater than 110?
So the position would continue, and our understanding of how the position would work is that there will be grant writing and grant funding as part of this. So yes, there will be an expense that would come into our county budget, but we would expect that we would be able to do the pull in grant monies that would have administrative and perhaps even salary lines. It's a fair point. It was one of the reasons that I originally proposed the position as a consultant so that we would see how that went. But I feel that since we have proposed it, we've seen an outpouring of people wanting assistance in all different kinds of areas that aren't currently being served by Soil and Water, Cornell Cooperative, the Farmland Bureau, Farm Protection Bureau. So I think that we have to figure out a way to do it, and we'll have 2 years to do it because we have this funding from ARPA.
Right. So the other thing that I want to mention is we had a proposal to hire a grant writer as well, right? So now would that be a duplication of effort between this position and a grant writer if we choose to elect that? And I'm still concerned about the annual funding for this. I mean, I know that, you know, you said we have funding now in another year, but what do we do down the road? We're committing future legislators for funding that we have, you know, just adding a department, basically, right? That doesn't exist today. Right?
If we only had money for one grant writer, it should be for agriculture for a lot of reasons. What the sector is in Ulster County, and the fact that there is a tremendous amount of federal and other monies flowing to climate resilience in the agricultural sphere, soil health, other opportunities that we would not be able to capitalize on that are already here. I've gotten 3 emails in the past 2 months about grant opportunities. We don't have anybody to address it. In addition to that, I do support the other grant writers because I think that the ability to bring in that funding is really critical, and our current executive and legislative staff are doing quite well, but we know we're leaving money on the table.
Chair Rickhouse.
Thank you. Comments more than questions, and some of them are to Legislator Cahill's questions. So first of all, and I'll work with Legislator Nolan to change the description here,
yeah,
because I think the description is problematic in that the description implies that what this position is an administrator for the ARPA $1 million, which would be based on the position about a $900,000 ARC program, and that's not really what it is. I mean, that's one component of the position, but really it's envisioned in large part as an agriculture specialist who very firmly already exists in this world. I don't know the person, I'm not saying, but just the job description and requirement would be that the person already firmly exists in the ag world and has specific skills in grant writing. We know that there is going to be significant federal funds opening up, and we want to be on the front end of being able to protect Ulster County farmland and assist our farmers in that regard. we envision it as a management position, in part because there's an expectation that this position fairly quickly is going to pay for itself, and if the person isn't delivering, I would expect that we would revisit that. I think one thing I want to mention is there has been a lot of debate and discussion, including between the two of us, but it's gone much broader than Legislator Nolan and me, the idea of where this position would live. We had a meeting with many relevant department heads, including economic development, planning, environment, and at the end of that meeting, there was a consensus that planning might be the place. We're rethinking that, and Legislator Nolan and I are working through it, but I just want to say it because prior to where it finally lands, it may end up being in planning. I also think it's going to be critical, despite the fact that I think there's a strong sense of consensus from the administration and the executive, and I know we're going to have a new executive's office, that this is because of a legislative initiative. It began as a conversation coming out of ARPA funds, but we want to make sure in this specialized position that the legislature has a role in helping to choose the person, and that this person is also reporting to legislative committees directly, because again, it's a highly specialized position that's going to exist in one of these departments, but it's not a silo. Like we fully expect that we're at whichever department the position does land in, that it'll be working with the other ones I mentioned. It'll be working with planning, working with environment, working with economic development, and working with the legislature, given that's a legislative initiative. So I strongly support, and let me also say that meeting with the department heads began really with the full concept being that we were going to contract out for this for 1 year, as Legislator Nolan said. But what came about in that conversation and subsequent conversations with Soil and Water and Cornell and planning at the table, but Soil and Water and Cornell, was that we in Ulster County, there's a real there's a hole in terms of applications for open space, but particularly farmland protection grants. Our neighboring counties are getting millions of dollars in those grants, and part of why that exists is there is no one, there, both from our existing organizations and in county, that's actually doing that right now. And that there was a strong consensus around that. So we came out of both of those meetings with a I would call it a universal consensus that this needs to be a county position, not a contract person, and that is for two reasons: to signal our investment as a real investment, not a temporary investment, and also to attract a different level of person. You know, only certain people are going to be able to apply for a 1 year gig. So. I strongly support it, but again, there may be some tweaks coming, and I think we can agree that the description will definitely change.
I apologize. I didn't see that the justification needed those changes before today.
Legislator Ron.
Thanks. Just a statement. I'd be much more likely to support it with a sunset and then give us a chance to decide after we expend the ARPA funds on the position if we wanted to continue it rather than just have it continue and then decide to remove it. I'm always a big fan of sunsets.
I should have
I guess I'm trying to piece it up, because this actually, in my opinion, should at least involve our committee, right, with planning and ag, and this is the first time hearing of a lot of these meetings. So the thing that I want to say is that are we anticipating that the grants will fund with the program, including the director going forward, or are we taking a chance that the grants will support that?
We're taking a chance, and when I say that they're going to fund them, I don't mean direct, and again, this is just me talking, this is no one else talking, but I don't mean direct funding. I mean in the way that when we talk about our funding to Soil and Water, just using this as an example, to Soil and Water and Cornell Cooperative, we very often speak in an you know, we invest $100,000 into this organization and they bring $1 million into the county. I mean it in that way, that, you know, I think and I expect that at the end of the day or at the end of the term or at the end of the year that a position like this that is successful, we're going to be able to point to and say that position brought in X millions of dollars to forever preserve farmland in Ulster County, and that's worth its weight in gold. So while it may not directly fund the position, I think it's critically important. And did you have another question? Because I wanted to speak to Ken's point, but he's not here. The other thing I wanted to
say, because Sip T wants it also, if you want to wait till Ken gets back.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, I'll wait till Ken gets back on Sunset.
I did just as a comment to you, I mean, do you envision, because there's USDA grants, there's a lot of ag grants available, and I think it was either you or the chair who mentioned that we missed out on a couple. So this position could very well be funded, as Legislator Walters was speaking about yesterday, by grant money coming in. And do you also envision that for this position, or is it a very finite description at this point?
I think we have to be careful about that. As the chair said, it certainly has the indirect benefit. I'm not familiar enough with those grants to know whether or not they can build in salary. I expect that they do, actually. And so I think the answer is yes, but I want to be cautious because this came to us because members of the Soil and Water District Board came in the summer saying that agriculture in Ulster County is in a crisis and asking for help. And so with the ARPA monies here, we've tried to rev up quickly to make a match between the ARPA funding and this need that was identified. And I've been the person mostly in the middle, but also with Legislator Litz and with prior Legislator Jim DeLon. We have been working in this sphere together for a few months. And so on the land conservation and preservation, previous Legislator DeLon is really an expert, and so I feel really strong in that realm. In some of the other realms, I have a little bit of knowledge from working in the climate sphere and soil resilience, pollinators, but none of us are the expert that I think that Ulster County needs. And one of the things that confirmed my feeling that we should do this is as I went around, I found a lot of people willing to help, but I didn't find somebody who really knew this sphere. So I think we have to have it.
Well, two things, just since Ken's not back, to Legislator Petit's point, I think that would be the hope that, you know, as you said, that eventually, it's certainly if able that it could be funded via grants, but I don't think we'd want to make the promise on the front end. For the Sunset, I would strongly urge my colleagues to resist it and remind everyone that we are the Sunset, right? So we can take anything out of a budget at any time. And while sometimes our memories may be short on this one, I think we can keep really our eyes on it. And my concern about creating something with the Sunset is we would actually and directly be telling the person that we're hiring that you're out of a job in a year unless it gets approved. You know, the reality is almost everyone who works in the county is out of a job in a year unless they get approved in this budget. We could put a red. I'm not threatening anything, but we could put a red line through anybody. There's very few that we can't. So I think it would be a mistake to overtly state it as Sunset. But I also think, and I've had a lot of conversations with former Legislator DeLon, you know, and I think and Legislator Nolan and to some extent Legislator Litz, who's a, you know, a strong supporter of the whole program, but you know, this position I really envision as someone that's gonna be specifically delivering and gonna be specifically held accountable for delivering. So I mean, I'm more than willing to take a chance on it, but I just don't want us to transmit that with a sunsetted position. This is actually very exciting, I think, for Ulster County, the possibility of building this capacity up.
Anybody else? I'll just a couple of comments I have. I would sort of offer a sort of a hybrid response to what Legislator Ronquant did and to what you're saying, which is what we did for the transit with the ridership and having it where it had to be reviewed, not renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a compromise, and I would feel more comfortable with that, where it would be, have to be taken up with whatever committee it would fall under, have them review it in that period of time. Is there any plan for clawbacks or protections so properties that, or farms that receive funding had to either maintain the agricultural status, or if they sell, would they have to pay back? Is there thought towards that?
Not in this program, because the dollar amounts are very small, really. If all 200 or 250 farms come in, it will be, you know, just a few thousand dollars. It could be that if we don't get that, that we're able to roll through more than once, and so the number will be slightly higher. But I think that the effort would be to actually get compliance rather than to have a mechanism for clawback. It'd be administratively more cumbersome than we would benefit.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah.
Just to your offer, the compromise. One of the things that we're going to work on in the job description, in terms of requesting or including legislative engagement in the selection of this person, would also be a very specific protocol of this person's reporting out to the Committee of Economic Development, Agriculture, etc. And in that, we can ask for a reporting requirement, which I think is contemplated as well.
Strongly support that.
Yeah, and I would just add to them that just reminding me of something else is that with the resolution, the amendment that I put in for the position for, you know, the analyst, it would be good to have going into this a set of goals that this is going to accomplish, so we have a metric to start looking at in a year, 2 years, whatever the time frame is that you feel you need to be able to evaluate this program. What were the goals going into it, and what have we accomplished in that time? So I would just encourage that that be spelled out somewhere.
Yeah, I did have a presentation on this that I thought I did for the Economic Development Committee, and in there are some goals. They have expanded since then, so I'll work that up, and we can put that with the package.
Great. Thank you. Let's get her. You're up.
Thanks for bearing with me. My first budget amendment here. This concerns getting us more bus drivers in our Department of Public Transportation. And I propose to do that by paying for a new state-required entry-level theory course, which is the first step that a driver would need before they could then proceed to the regular commercial driver's license training. So, in my proposal, we would use the commercial driver training school at Kingston Plaza. It's called, that's Commercial Driver Training Incorporated. We would allocate funds for up to 10 drivers to take this entry-level theory course over the course of the year. The course lasts 5 days. And I just want to note that the justification line, I've got an error in there. It is not the case that they will have their CDL license after that. That's the first step. And then from there, they'll do their 18 hours behind the wheel training, which has been part of the requirement all along. And then they'll take their test. And I might refer to an individual from the public who's here, who has been in support of our efforts to expand public transportation services here in Ulster County. That would be Howard Ball from CSEA. So I might call on Mr. Ball for questions as to CSEA's information on this. So basically, this money would go to the Department of Public Transportation, and then they would turn it over in most cases, as they currently do, to the Office of Employment and Training. OET currently is able to, through their existing budget, to support the rest of the training for anyone who qualifies. And I did talk with Sharon Williams as recently as yesterday. Director Williams told me that she is confident that just nearly everybody would qualify under their terms as would qualify under the Department of Public Transportation. So basically, as long as UCAT says we're going to hire you and you're entry level, you don't have your CDL yet, then we just pay for this entry level for up to 10 brand new drivers if they need it, and then existing funding mechanisms and existing relationships that we have with this driving school would take over. By the way, we do have a trainer in the Department of Public Transportation already. Sandy Closey is capable of fulfilling the 19A certified New York State Department of Transportation course training. She has other responsibilities that may prohibit us from doing that in-house. But as I mentioned, the existing relationship we have with this driver school, which conveniently is, they have their plaza location, they have some training down at Hurley, and they also have a location right behind the Office of Employment and Training on Boyce's Lane. That relationship would kick in for anyone that's needed. As I said, that's how that normally happens already. So at this point, I think I'm ready to take any questions.
Chair Bartels.
Thank you. I really like the idea. I'm wondering, you know, we had talked about early on in caucus, I don't remember if it was this year or last term, or I think it was this year, maybe as a part of the ARPA discussion, the idea of having a program related to nurses where, you know, we'd have a nurses training through SUNY Ulster, and that in it, you know, we would essentially subsidize the schooling in exchange for a commitment to work for the county for a period of time. I wonder if there's a way to contemplate that mm-hmm. in this, not simply for the 625, but to essentially subsidize either directly. I don't know, you talked about how OET kicks in. I'm not sure if it's fully subsidized, but essentially mm-hmm. subsidize the driver training in exchange for a commitment to work for UCAT for a period of time. And the follow-on, the question connected with that suggestion is, have you spoken to UCAT, and is there any hesitancy to hire a brand new CDL driver to drive the buses?
Okay, so let me start with the second question. I haven't asked that question directly, however, Mr. Ball may have some.
I could answer both of those questions for you if you give me the opportunity. Howard Ball with CSEA. I represent the CSEA workforce.
So to answer your second question first, this has been an ongoing discussion with UCAT even before the now gone director came in. There are not enough drivers countrywide. The training program that now all drivers have to take, it used to be, you know, other drivers could train other drivers. All of that's out the window now. So your pool of available drivers is going to continue to diminish unless a training program is put in place that, you know, allows people to gain this training. From the discussions, I really don't think any employer right now, including Ulster County, cares if they're brand new, if they have 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. They need drivers. So I don't think that that's the concern. I think Ulster County Transit has a lot of good policies in place. I think there are good people up there that will make sure once these drivers start that they're off on a good foot and then they're not just, you know, out there driving aimlessly without knowing what they're doing. The second point to that is we've actually had conversations with Ulster County, not so much during contract negotiations, but kind of connected to contract negotiations, that if training programs were put in place,
CSEA is on board to negotiate language in the CSEA agreement that somebody that is trained by Ulster County at an expense to Ulster County would have to commit to a certain number of years of service, or they would have to pay that back if they were to separate. So that would be something, whether you put it in your amendment or not, it would still have to be negotiated into the agreement. And it doesn't have to wait until contract negotiations. We could do that as a side agreement tomorrow. We're fully on board with that. It is, you know, right now, the transit, you're going to be faced with a situation where you're going to have runs that you don't have drivers for, and that's coming relatively quickly. The second part of what Phil's going to talk about is directly connected to that. Right now, a driver with Ulster County with 10 years of service can walk into Dutchess County Transit and make $4 an hour more than they're making here, and that's brand new off the street. By the time they're there for 10 years, they're making $18,000 more than a 10-year driver here. $1.75 to cross the bridge, extra half hour commute, extra $20,000 a year, $15,000 a year. It's almost a no-brainer. So you're competing with, you know, school districts and privates and everything else. So if you don't do something to change where this is going, you're not going to have drivers to operate your runs. That's the bottom line.
Okay, thank you. I have just two follow-on questions. So this contemplates the $6.25, but what's the full cost of a driver training? Does anyone know that?
I have more information. At the same school, to do DMV road tests and 18-hour behind-the-wheel training, which includes one road test attempt using their bus, it's $2,810, or for two candidates at once, it's $5,700.
Okay. So, I thank you, Mr. Rolick. I love the idea of fully funding the training along with the caveat that the person will work for a certain number of years.
CSEA is fully on board
at Ulster County, if not pay back the training. I think we also should talk to Ulster County Community College. I saw a piece on 60 Minutes or something. Now it's going back a year. This has been a problem a long time coming. And the community college on that piece offered the training, and it may be something that our community college wants to offer too. I don't know if they could jump in the game, or we do with the private company that's doing it. But certainly for the immediate, we do with the private company. I mean, I think that I think we're not only competing with Dutchess County in this. We're talking about a national shortage. You hear of long haul truckers getting significant salaries. So if you're that's maybe a quality of life decision as well. But you're weighing a lot of things. So I like that it's solution oriented, and I think we should expand it to think about the full training with the commitment to the county.
Let's say Walter.
Thanks. I agree. I think that this is great, and I was the one who proposed the nursing, even though we never followed through on that. But I think at this price, we obviously could do, I would like to do everything we could for these people so that they are supported the whole way. I would say that just a consideration, I mean, definitely we have the shortage here, but, I work with MentorMe and they have this large homeless population. And the beginning of this school year and the previous school year, the buses that would pick up the kids from the homeless shelters to schools weren't running. They didn't go to school for the first 4 days of school because there was no buses for them. And the county tried to pick up the slack, but they were limited also. I would, you have to have an S at the end of that certification, but I feel like it's our responsibility to also, I would be very supportive of expanding this beyond 10, and also recognizing that that maybe there's a certain number who we look to commit to county, but then others who could potentially serve in our municipal school bus system, because it's just devastating the idea that these kids would miss the any days of school because no one's picking them up.
Senator Kale?
Thank you. So a couple of quick questions. So the commercial driving training, you mentioned that they give them hours behind the wheel. What's this original, this $625 course? Was that just all classroom and there's no behind the wheel training at all in that?
That's my understanding. I did speak to Director Rozier, head of Department of Public Transportation this morning. She said this is a new state mandate following that fatal limousine crash in Schoharie County.
So my next question is, have we looked at, you know, exploring having that company using our equipment have some sort of contract, right, to get these folks from point A to a CDL as like a, just like any other contract that we have in the county to help them, you know, help us do it with all the caveats that we have in place, so, you know, committing to a couple of years, but, you know, have a private contract with that company to train our drivers on our buses. And that way we don't have that learning curve gap there. You know what I mean? If we're going to commit to the full training, it may be worthwhile to go out to that company to see if they're willing to take that on as a responsibility, right? To contract with the county to do the full training from soup to nuts, right? I mean, to me, I think we're in agreement that this is something that we all should be doing it to a degree, and some people feel like we should be doing more, right? And for me, I'd much rather see, you know, a commitment from the driver, right, and a commitment from the county saying, look, you commit to us, we'll commit to you, and we'll get you a CDL as long as you stay with us for whatever the negotiated time frame ends up being, right? Yeah. Thank you. It's a great amendment, by the way.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just to clarify, this is up to 10, correct? So if we don't have space to hire 10 people, we're not going to use that money, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And then just to address your comment, I don't know about the school districts that run their own buses. I know the ones that contract out, those companies, they actually have sign-on bonuses and they pay for the training for drivers to become CDLs. I know First Student or First Choice, whatever it's called, and then Rolling V down by me, they're littering the streets with signs for, you know, that they're willing to pay for all the training that goes along with it and a sign-on bonus.
That's kind of interesting because then despite that, they still have a shortage. It makes me wonder whether there's some other carrot we need to offer on this. I mean, obviously you spoke a little bit to the salary, but if they're doing all of what you're proposing and yet they're still faced with a shortage.
They're not getting pensions.
Can I speak to a couple of those points?
Sure.
So there's only two school districts in Ulster County that use district drivers, which means public sector. All the other districts have farmed it out to a private for-profit company, which means at the end of the day, whatever one of those companies is operating for a school district, and I assume you were talking about Kingston?
I'm definitely talking about Kingston.
So what happens in Kingston School District Transportation is after all the transportation is done and all the drivers are paid and all the kids are moved, there's money going into somebody's pocket on a profit basis, and they are only going to dip so far into their pocket to provide a service. So there's a breaking point there for them to still, you know, produce a profit to stay in the business. That's why Dutchess County Transit went back to being public, because it got too expensive for a private to do public transportation. Now, school districts are a little different. They contract with the district to, you know, for providing a service for X amount of dollars, and in that X amount of dollars, there is a healthy profit built into that after all expenses. The thing that makes county drivers more attractive is you have health insurance, they're full-time positions, you get, you know, there's perks and benefits to being a county employee working for a municipality on a full-time basis rather than working for a private on a part-time basis, and it's just about the money then. Because really that's all these privates are offering is basically just a wage package. So whereas Ulster, there's other things that come along with that.
So Kingston is private is what you're saying?
The only two districts in Ulster County that are not private is New Paltz and Highland. And I think some of Highland is private and some of it's not. Every other school district in Ulster County operates on a private bus system for the transportation of their students.
So, and I don't know who from the executive's office could speak to this, but obviously something kicked off the county needing to get involved with transporting kids who are otherwise housed.
Well, there's a short. There's definitely a short.
No, I get that. Right. But I'm just wondering what we could do with this to kind of be prepared in such a situation, even if it's if they're not necessarily, say we don't need 10. I mean, I don't even know what the number is that we actually need, but if we don't need 10, we would potentially want to train some extras to have that certification otherwise, even if there wasn't a position, so they could be called upon if need be or something. But I just, something kicks off the county getting involved if the school district's not handling it for whatever reason, nefarious or otherwise. And so I just wonder if there's a way we could utilize this to be more prepared, because in those situations, we weren't prepared and we weren't able to pick up the slack for the school bus system. And so it was the kids who paid for it.
When it comes to training, OET, if you are in an employment situation that is negative, meaning you're laid off, unemployment, employment issues, OET has a program through this exact school to provide that training for not just bus drivers, but CDL in general. That program already exists. I know several people that have gone through it over the years. So I would say that maybe if there are people that are interested in going to that field, there may already be something through OET for them. Really, it's a matter of getting people interested in going into that field, and that's really what the shortage is right now. It's not just a training issue, but opening a training issue for Ulster County basically gives you the people that you wouldn't normally have gotten easier. But I'm pretty confident that OET has a program, depending on your current employment situation, where that training would be provided for free, and I do know several people that have gone through that recently.
Thank you, Legislator.
You're welcome. With permission from Legislator Petit, may I join her for the next one that I have standing?
Sure. As long as you don't do a duet, we're fine.
Thank you. Okay, so on the proposed amendment number 32, what we're proposing for the UCAT drivers is to increase them, it's drivers and dispatchers, to increase from a grade 8 to a grade 10, which will bring their pay scale up to approximately $25 an hour. As you've already heard, right now we're competing with private school districts and private companies, which pay upwards of $33 to $35 an hour. We have a shortage of bus drivers. When there was call-outs earlier in the fall, that led to canceling bus routes, etc. We do have our CSCA union representative here, Howard Ball, which was invited by Legislator Erner, and he actually I should have included that. We can send it to you. There was a report done to make sure that there wouldn't be any compression issues as far as salaries go. Legislator Erner, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to add, this will include also the bus driver dispatcher. That's a different title, and CSEA would like them to be rewarded for their additional responsibilities, raising them to grade 11. This only proposes to raise them to grade 10. other than that,
any questions? Yeah. Mr. Walter?
Oh, thanks. So how would this now relate compared to Dutchess?
I'll give you that exact figures in 1 second. Just bear with me for one second.
Sure.
The chair board does.
So is this the most appropriate way to adjust, to make a salary adjustment, is just changing the grade? Is that?
Yeah, in terms of for civil service, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
And again, I think they put that compression too, by going up too far, there would be compression within the department as well.
So right now, going into 2023, at a grade 8, a bus driver will start at 2114. Dutchess County, 2023, a bus driver starts at 2451. After 5 years, Ulster County's up to 2585. Dutchess would be at 2706. And there's actually, it's gonna progress more than that, because Dutchess County's wage increases moving into 24 and 25 are higher than Ulster, so it's going to even spread that further. The benefits package overall in Dutchess is better than Ulster's on top of that, so it's not just salary, it's benefits, and the spread is going to go even further moving into 24, 25.
All right, I'm going to need that in English. So the numbers on this page.
I don't know what page you're looking at.
Sorry. So if we raise into a grade 10, which is putting the bus drivers, I mean, obviously there are several of them, but it's basically raising them to a grade 10. So it's a range of about 48,000 to 62,000 for these bus drivers. Do you know how that compares?
The entry level, and Howard, you have Dutchess County's entry level.
I have Dutchess County's entire contract.
Yeah, so the entry level at grade 10 then would be $23.15.
Can you just speak in terms of annual?
Yep.
I just want to compare.
Hold on. Yeah, I got to do it too.
I know, I'm just, I mean, even if it's...
$48,152 would be entry level.
Okay.
And Dutchess's entry level right now for that same title coming into 23 is.
Do you have an hourly number?
Yeah, I broke it down hourly as well. So Dutchess, a bus driver's annual salary entry level for 23 is $52,776.
Okay. So it'll still, Dutchess is still higher.
Yeah.
The only way to truly reflect it, Ulster County's entire salary schedule, and this is true from management confidential all the way down to whoever empties the trash cans, is lower than it is every place else in surrounding job titles for surrounding area. So if you're going to adjust, you know, the bus drivers and the dispatchers and the bus driver dispatcher, if you actually adjust them to where they should be, then you have to adjust all the titles in UCAD, and then you have to look at the titles outside of UCAD, because this discrepancy exists across every salary. And, you know, I don't represent management, but I'm going to speak on behalf of management. What Ulster County pays its managers, I don't know how you keep talent. I honestly don't know how you keep talent here. You can't raise the drivers so dramatically that they're going to surpass people in titles that are higher than them now, unless you're prepared to address those titles as well. And then you have to address other titles, and the domino effect would be endless. And really, that's what has to be done, and it needs to be done over the course of some time. But right now, you're going to be in a catastrophic situation shortly with your bus operation if you don't raise these drivers. Sure. And the dispatchers, because then the dispatchers will just go drive and you won't have any dispatchers.
Chair Bartels.
So, I mean, this is one of the challenges for me, and I've spoken to Bert about it as well, because we talk in all these different, you know, in all these different terminologies. We talk per hour, but there's an annual, but the longevity's built in. So it's very hard, you know, for me to break it out. When you talk about the base, based on what you just said the base was and what you're saying the proposed base would be, we only have three drivers at the base. So every other driver is actually making considerably more than they would. Like, they couldn't move to Dutchess.
Absolutely.
And start, yeah, they could, but they don't take their base with them. They don't take their longevity with them.
Right, but somebody that's been with Ulster for 6 years, mm-hmm. is going to walk into Dutchess off the street making the same money with better benefits, and then in a few years they far surpass where they would have been with Ulster. So yes, yeah, so somebody with Ulster that's been with Ulster for 5 or 6 years at their salary could go to Dutchess tomorrow and make exactly what they're making right now walking in the door, and then in 3 or 4 years they're going to be making $6,000 more than they'd ever make in Ulster.
That's because their longevity translates to Dutchess? I'm confused.
No. So CSCA in Ulster County, longevity doesn't start until 8 years of service.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Before that, it's steps 1 through 6. Dutchess has more steps, but they also have longevity on top of their steps. So their longevity is higher, their steps pay more, their salary pays more, their disability benefits are better, their health insurance costs less. I could go on and on and on if you want to truly do apples to apples. Just the salary adjustment alone, Dutchess is still going to be better than you guys by a lot.
So what I'm saying is you're saying that someone right now, a bus driver that right now is making $59.5, can go over to Dutchess and make more as a starting bus driver.
I will tell you where the breaking point is.
Instead of just throwing numbers out right now off top of everybody's head or running from his paper, can we get this all in a sheet through Bert and his people as
Natalie
well?
Natalie and I will collect questions.
Yeah. I mean, because there's a lot of factors, as Chair Bertos points out, longevity, comparing benefits between county and county, but also between comparing Ulster County to Dutchess County, there's a cost of living issue as well. There's a difference. It's much more expensive in Dutchess County than
not so much anymore, but Ulster's not going to pay what Dutchess pays.
But you
want to set up an environment where Dutchess is not so attractive that a half-hour commute and a $2 toll is not too much to overcome. And I can tell you the story of what you guys had to do with health department nurses last year, because you couldn't get health department nurses. Because Dutchess County can't get health department nurses, and they were paying $21,000 more a year to start than Ulster was. So, I mean, that's the reality, is you won't get somebody to drive across the bridge for a couple grand, but for 15 grand, they sure as heck will. So somebody with 6 years of service in Ulster is making, and these are 2023 numbers, 5 years of service, 25.85 times 2080. So Ulster County, 5 years of service in 2023, driver's going to make $53,768.
Grade 10?
That's grade 8.
No, okay, that'll put
him in. Because the question is they can't leave Ulster and walk in the door at Dutchess. And let me get to Dutchess.
What are you looking at?
Dutchess County contractor.
Oh, okay.
I don't have.
That's what's happening.
I negotiated this, so I'm very, very familiar with it. So Dutchess County, walking in the door, off the street, a bus driver is going to make $52,776. So it's basically $1,000 less for a year, and then after that, they surpass Ulster yet again by thousands of dollars moving forward.
Okay, if we can get all those numbers, and if you could share that contract,
I could give you a contract.
We can do a spreadsheet on it that'll show the different steps and in what years we would be surpassed, and by what amount.
And Chair Bartels, I could. The new recruitment, especially if we're offering training. I mean, if we want to recruit them, we have to give them the incentive to want to work in the county.
Yes.
Instead of just going over to Dutchess and making what you would if you had to be here 6 years. So.
And moving to 2024, Dutchess is going to have a 3.75% salary increase, whereas Ulster's 2% plus 25 cents, which is about 3%. So, you know, Dutchess, not only are they paying more, but with the salary increases, that's going to make it even more dramatic because their salary increases are higher than Ulster's.
Legislator Cahill.
Thank you. So I got a question for Commissioner Gauley. For some reason, I'm thinking that we did something like this not that long ago at UCAT. Did an across the board salary increase.
That was DPW.
That was DPW. In terms of the contract that we just settled.
For the same reason, though, right?
Yes.
Literally
yes.
For the same reason?
Yes. Yeah. And the reason being is the towns were actually paying higher.
Correct.
Well, actually, New York State was paying higher than Ulster, which is unheard of. So Ulster County ended up putting $5.80 an hour before any other wage increases.
Right.
$5.80 an hour to everybody in DPW, and then to put the wage increases on top of that.
Okay.
That doesn't even bring Ulster to the top in the area. That just brought you over the middle of the area. So
where we belong, in the middle.
Right, right. but that's how dramatic it was in DPW. You weren't going to have people plowing your roads.
No, I got you. So I guess then, you know, that's the consideration that anybody that takes the time to do what you folks have done, you know, we can have this valid argument every single department, really.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct. Buildings and grounds, you know, same thing. Dramatically off where they should be. DSS, you know, you guys are posting social welfare examiners on a daily basis, and they're coming and going as fast as you hire them. You train them, they get their training, and then out the door they go. So at some point, this is going to hit every department because your other employers that you're competing with, they're doing the things to bring people up, and we're not.
Thank you. Next one.
I mean, probation officers in Dutchess County, walking in the door, it's a difference of $5.50 an hour times 2,080 hours. That's $10,000 more to go to Dutchess than it is to Ulster.
All right, so we're going to take, which number is it?
I think it was 42.
The SPCA.
I don't think it's on here because it was given to us.
Oh, okay. So it's the one that was just given today.
But I think it's going to change.
No, you can have that.
Okay.
I have the executive director of the SPCA here, so I've asked permission to take this next one out of order. It'll be, amendment number, no number.
Because it was given to us last business. Night. It's under new business.
Okay, so it'll be under technical
amendment
new
business.
Amendment
number
1075. Yes. The director, Golnick, did find the budget line that we've been budgeting for $23,500. Annually. It's budgeted in the health department line for spay and neuter. So there'll be an amendment to this budget amendment, and that's to take it out of the line that you found it in and move it into this line 4505. So with that, since there is $23,500 in the budget, I am asking for a supplement of $10,000 more. And I can bring the director up. Yes.
I'm just having a hard time.
I know it's confusing.
Well, I have the next thing was the NEO.
It's not on that. It was given a separate sheet from today.
Do you have the sheet?
Legislator Walter.
Just curious, Legislator Pete.
Yes.
Just background on where the $10,000 came from. I assume you have some knowledge of how much it actually is.
Yes. Yes, if you'd like to come up, this is Gina, and I would say your last name, someday I'll pronounce it.
Carbonara.
She is the director of the Ulster County SPCA. She's been running the spay-neuter program since 2015. And this year, the end of August, beginning of September, they actually ran out of funds, especially during COVID. It's now pushed our cat population back over there, prolific reproducers. And we're trying to address that. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll turn the floor over to her. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Kind of wanted to make sure that I bring some stats and some data to this. So before COVID, we were doing this grant at a smaller amount, as well as for a lower cost per cat for the SPCA. The problem with that cost per cat at that point was that we were not not even covering our costs in order to do each of those surgeries. It costs us just under $50 to do each one of those surgeries. So this past year in 2022 was the first time that we actually increased that amount to $50 per cat, so we can actually cover the costs for us doing these surgeries. The 23.5 that we have right now is getting us through until about the end of September. So at this point, this time of the year, we still have cats who are having kittens. We still have a lot of cats who weren't able to get on the schedule during the beginning part of the year. So we do have a lot of folks in our community who are still calling us at this point, trying to get in to get these cats spayed and neutered, but unfortunately we don't have any more money left. Traditionally, when you go back even before COVID, we normally did not make it through an entire year. We made it through three quarters of the year in order to cover with the funding that we had then as well. So this has been a consistent issue that we've had with the grant, going back even to when we first started, where we did have a few months every year that we still didn't have funding to be able to cover what everyone was asking for, our clients who need to have these cats spayed and neutered. So at this point, if we can increase that amount, that should be able to get us through an entire year. And as much as we would like to think that kitten season is only a season, it realistically is not anymore. Kittens come in throughout the year. There is no more where it starts to fall off around August, September timeframe. All through the winter, we still get calls about people who are finding kittens, who still need to have feral or community cats spayed and neutered. So this isn't any longer a thing that just happens kind of from March to the end of summer. This is a problem that we have year-round. One of the things I want to add as well is that with spay-neuter packages that we do at the Ulster County SPCA, all the vaccinations and preventives are included in that. So even with our public services that we provide, those are included with the feral cats, community cats. We also include that. So the rabies is included in that as well as the 5-in-1. That's not included in the contract, but we do include that because we want to make sure that the cats going back out into the community are being protected from all these other viruses that they can catch if they are out there unprotected. So they're going back out into the community, being fully vaccinated, having preventatives for flea and ticks, all the things that we need to make sure that these cats have as they go back out to the community. So in order to make sure we can do that and provide not just for the cats, but for the community itself, we really do need to increase the funding for the grant in order to make sure that we can do this year-round and not just end up getting about 9 months out of the year that we can do it.
So can you help me understand how, when you, if every single year you're not getting enough money to really do what you need to do, what's the process with the county that informs, do they just renew a 23,000 every year blankly, or do you have a conversation and say this is what we really need, or like how does this happen each year, the amount get determined?
Right, so the first couple of years that I was not the director when this first started happening, so the first couple of years that we were doing this, it was set down at 15,000. It was in 2019 when it was increased to 23.5. So there's been a few different things that have happened of how the funding itself has shifted to, we used to only be able to start using it in March and then go through the rest of the year, but now it's on an annual calendar, just like a normal calendar year, so we can start in January and work through the whole year with it. As well as last year was the first time that we had the discussion to make sure that everybody was understanding that we were not covering our costs as we were executing this grant. So the conversations have been a little more prolific in the last 3 years than it had been previous to that, as to, you know, how the process is working and making sure that we were having better communication as far as what we needed from the county and how it was actually being used.
So just to follow up, so was it communicated, this is how many we were able to deliver, this is how many we weren't able to, so it would really be this amount of money, but then they still gave you 23,000 in the contract?
In the conversation of increasing, it was, again, looking at the amount that we were going to be reimbursed for each surgery, and what the amount was that would get us through the year at that point. Again, increasing the amount of what it actually costs us to do the surgery in order to get that covered, decreases the amount of surgery that we do with the same pot of money.
Right. Started last year.
Right. That was the first time last year that we were able to get that approved.
So that's the answer, because last year they brought it up, so were they not actually subsidizing
right.
the program?
I guess I just still wonder maybe for, like, some point I assume there's a conversation that says, hey, if this costs us more to do, we can't deliver what you need us at this amount, we need more money. I assume that occurred, just so that not every year, you know, you would think that the process is, if you're the person who's your organization is delivering it, that there's this conversation that says, all right, we were not able to meet the need, whether it's your costs are going up or more cats are in need or maybe less cats are in need a future year, but, you know, I assume there's some conversation that said, we fell short, the only way we're predicting for next year, we'll need this amount of money. Like, what happens on your end
that would be within the department. Again, this is within the Department of Health, so I don't know if that conversation happened within the Department of Health. I wouldn't know.
That's fine. I mean, we can even bring it up in Health Human Services Housing. I'm just really wondering how, I assume you give them deliverables of some sort of, this is how many we served, and this is how many are on, like, the waiting list, so that just as it gets decided each year, you shouldn't need to have a legislator do an amendment. It should, the need should match the amount. So, okay, thanks.
Chair Wertaus.
Thanks. So I just was wondering, so the county's funding, now that it's covers your costs, do you then provide it, because I just want to know, do you provide it free?
Yes.
Because you have on the website $50 for a feral cat and $100 for a pet cat.
Yes.
So how do you notice that this service is even available? Since I can't find free spay and neutering on your website.
That's actually been changed because we don't have the grant anymore. So we can't advertise that we have the grant if that's not available.
So when you have the grant,
yes.
you advertise that you have free spay and neutering,
yes. Yes.
and then you keep the advertising until it runs out.
Yes. Exactly.
And is that all on site in Kingston? Or do you
yes.
do it at any?
No, it's only in our clinic.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you track where the cats are coming from? Are they mostly from the Kingston community?
They're from all over, and actually a lot of them do come from the southern tier. And again, there's just a lot more folks who can't afford it otherwise that are living in that part of the county.
Do you keep note of that and provide? Can you provide that information back to the county where the cats are coming from? That
yes.
would be great. That would be great help.
Yep.
Thank you.
I will just say from the southern end that I know of at least several over the past few years of what I call them as raids of houses that have had over 20 cats per houses that they've had, SPCA has had to come down and take away. It's yeah. been, yeah, pretty crazy yeah. situations.
That's another budget amendment right there.
Not that I think this would be an issue, but just as a question. So this is a stipend, not a fund.
It isn't a budget line.
What I mean is that they don't have to, it's not a cost reimbursement. It's, we give them allocated, it would be the 33.5. We would just give it to the SBCA and we would know.
Right, it's billed. So each month we provide a report to the county that shows how many surgeries that we
okay.
did, what the dollar amount is, and then they pay us on a monthly basis.
Got it, thank
so
you.
So the best case scenario is we'll never have to use this fund once we get every feral cat spayed or neutered.
Good luck on that.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right?
yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going back to amendment number 33, and that is to put in an additional 2 MEOs into the roads and bridges. I had the benefit of doing a tour with them over the summer, and I was surprised that the capital projects that we approve are only a small portion of what actually gets done in-house by our county workers. I'm sorry. What is an MEO? Machine equipment operator?
Motor equipment.
Okay.
It's basically entry level at the highway department. For Ulster County, it's entry level and highway.
they, during COVID, when we had the offer to take early retirement, they were, it's my understanding, staffed at about 30. Now they're at about 15. Several of the workers there are at retirement age. Even, I mean, they haven't said that they're going to be walking out, but they certainly need the additional help. This year they did in-house over 6 bridges. I got to see the one in Olive, the one in Shandaken, and the one in Saugerties. And this is an ask by Bob Moore, who is their director.
Sorry, so to clarify, there was, before the whole COVID's coming and we have to do it, there was 30?
30, so it was double the workforce.
And right now there's 15?
There's 15, yeah. And it goes
and
beyond...
And in the 2023 budget already? Like to add.
What they did in the 2023 budget is there was some movement in job titles, but there is a net gain of 2.
So there's 7.
I was looking
right
for, they had asked for 8 to 10. There's a net gain of 2, and I proposed another 2.
That's correct? That we're now technically would be at 17 without this amendment?
We did add 2 new MEOs to this department. There was some shifting of positions, but yeah, it's. I'm looking at the position. There's 2 new MEOs they requested.
And the total is what? With the new budget?
In terms of the road and bridge department, it's 95 positions they have.
Out of the MEO specific that Laura's talking about,
yeah.
15.
I mean, give me a second. I just got to search quick.
Because I know you said you move people around, but if you move 2 MEOs and put 2 new ones in.
It wasn't MEOs that. Got movement, so let me just give me a second.
It was 1 MEO.
Yeah, speaking specifically the Roach and Bridges who do the rails over at the Van Damme location.
Well, that I wouldn't know in terms of the location. They have 32 MEOs. So. Go ahead.
Are the MEOs you're referring to specific to the bridge group?
Yes.
Do you know how many bridge MEOs?
The MEOs in the budget don't differentiate.
Right.
The department can move them around where they need.
So, but, I mean, somehow Laura was informed that there was 30 of these people and now there's 15 of them. So wherever that information came from.
This isn't from, in terms of the information she got, wasn't from the department head.
Not from the department head.
No.
Right, so we, you know.
Sorry. Yeah.
So. You know, in order for us to make an informed decision on this, we really need to be able to compare what Laura's talking about here to what we actually have.
Okay.
So, Laura, wherever that number...
So you need to script the numbers, the employee numbers, so we can tell. I can tell you exactly how many.
Yeah, so okay. If we saw a reduction of 50% of employees in a specific area, right, we shouldn't be able to correlate that to...
We'll get that from the department head.
Yeah.
We'll get a breakdown from Brendan.
It would be really cool. Including what 2023 already has, so we know.
Yes, like I said, we did add 2 new MEOs, but in terms of where they're going to be, I'll leave the department head look at that.
They had asked for 5.
And can you add that where before that retirement plan was, what they were
sure.
at?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Chair Brighthouse.
Yeah, well,
Laura, just a quick question. Are you talking about MEOs for the rail crew or MEOs for the bridge crew? Because they're 2 different crews.
Correct.
I thought they worked together. Because they said we do rails and we do bridges.
So the bridge crew has an MEO title that is identified as a bridge crew title that pays a little bit more than MEO. Whereas
which
the
is
rail,
what they had asked for.
The rail crew, I believe, has MEOs.
Yeah.
So they're 2 completely different crews. So it would make sense if they're asking for MEOs for the rail crew. The bridge crew, it would be known as a...
Bridge 1 and 2?
Yeah, bridge worker.
But the person you had mentioned isn't the department head putting the request in. Let me point that out.
Well, this was brought up during a tour of the facility and of their project.
Right. I hear you.
So
but
this
I'm
is,
just
this
saying
is,
the department
we'll
head is the one that put the request in.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, they do quite a bit there beyond. They also sure. do repairs to
yeah.
vehicles and it's...
Get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'd be really interested both in the historical data about, you know, how many numbers of employees and the sure. change of that, but very interested in the department head response. What did the department head ask for? What was the request? I don't have an open agenda.
Wasn't it for 5 new positions? But then there were some grade or title changes, so it's a net of 2 MEOs.
Thanks. And can you circulate, Bert, when yes. you get that information, sure. can that be circulated to all members as soon
yeah,
as possible?
Yeah, what I normally do is give it to Amber and
that's great.
To
yeah.
the information. They did ask for 4 MEOs.
And how many did they get?
They received 2.
Okay. And can we be specific about which MEOs they asked for? Can you find it?
Yes,
yeah,
we can. Yep.
Anything else?
Can I also ask one yep. more question? Can you also ask them to provide the justification that they provided?
We asked for that. Yeah, we'll get
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Number 34.
Next is number 34. EV charging stations. We recently approved a resolution putting $12,000 in for the, I believe it was the maintenance program for the charging stations. So they're not free. And as part of our climate action, we need to continue to collect the data. I think at one time it was $249 a month. I believe it's up over $300 per port. So that we can continue to collect that information. We are subsidizing a finite part of the population. You know, of course, our expectations would be that we can increase it and everybody's driving around EV chargers, cars, but that's not the case right now. And they're still receiving 2 hours free. So this is an increase in the revenues, and then we'll be passing a policy that the 2 hours are no longer free to charge an EV vehicle.
Chair Bartels?
So I recall, and it may not be relevant anymore, that in accepting the grant to put the EV charging stations in, that we had to provide the charging free. Do you know when that?
That's only a 2-year cycle, and they've been in longer than 2 years.
Okay.
So
and
that,
you
that's
where
it's coming
that?
On now. Yes, I talked to Europa McGovern. And it really is minimal if you're fortunate enough to own one. You know, I think it runs between 5 and 7 per charge. Has anybody used it and kept track? For a 4 to 6 hour charge?
I haven't used it, but I know that it's basically yeah. like a trickle charger.
Yeah.
So you get very low mileage.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
So
I don't
think it'll be a significant impact to the user, for sure, but it'll help the county.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'd be curious. I'd love to see. Can we get the Amber and Natalie? Can we get the usage data on those chargers, which I know exists and is delineated by zip code? So maybe if we could get a report on the usage data over the last year, or even since inception, I'd be very curious. I find that it's very often the spots are very often empty or blocked for some reason. Like they put a cone in them for some reason. I don't know what the story is with that. But you know, the other idea with it was that it was supposed to be, you know, a benefit to businesses in the uptown area mm-hmm. that people would come and charge. But again, so much has happened so fast that these charges are almost antiquated.
And I believe at one time it was being subsidized by the Ulster County Chamber, but I don't believe it is any longer. Yeah.
It
wasn't.
It was
in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Budget amendment number 35. This one is to eliminate, I also call it the 311. It's now been absorbed into our budget. It was my understanding that this was a COVID-related department that originally assisted and was part of our COVID dashboard, and then it progressed into a call center so we could have tickets generated to make sure that we're following up on any public services that would have been impacted by COVID. I've called in myself. I have never gotten a call back to close a ticket. So I'm very concerned that there is no sunset now on this department.
I say, Walter.
Yeah, so that's mostly right. I mean, I believe my recollection is that during COVID, sort of a more ad hoc response was put together, calls would pour in, and then last year, the constituent service, where they were basically kind of moved, since we were less calls because of COVID, they were moving it towards this, so it wasn't a COVID-specific constituent services, but more of what you're saying of, you know, all of the phone calls that come to the county, whether it's food needs or I have a hole in my, you know, in a road outside my house. I agree. Well, I'll say that a year ago, I advocated that this was not where I saw the need. I really felt that using the same, that most of these kinds of needs, while, you know, a hole in your road is important, most of these are kinds of the needs that DSS serves, and that I would rather have more case managers at DSS, yes, taking these calls and directing people to the services they need. I know that other legislators were supportive of this larger one because they thought that they would get data for their own communities, so that they could sort of make sure things were followed up on. We obviously didn't really get that. I got one report from Deputy Executive Kelly that was interesting, but not really as granular as I'd like, and I requested more, but we never got it. So I would say, you know, I half agree. Like, I would rather see these positions, as I had envisioned before, moved to being a part of DSS or DSS, Department of Health, Department of Mental Health, where these are case managers who you call this number and you need help with mental health, physical health, lead poisoning, housing, food, you know, all the social determinants, that they're going to help them get those services that they need. So
And I totally agree with
there's
you.
There's a way, yeah, that we could move these positions more under that. Now, I don't know if the people who are in them now have the skills and capacity to be case managers. I mean, it doesn't take a lot, not to belittle the job, but I mean, you don't have any, there's no formal training. You just have to be able to know what the services are to connect people, follow up on it, and make sure that they've gotten the care. But from the beginning, I never understood why this was I did not buy into this being a necessary county thing. I really preferred it to be associated with DSS.
Chair Barkowski.
Thank you. So just first a technical question. So the total impact to the budget, if I'm looking at this page rather than pulling up the budget, because it's a little confusing to me, like the total cost of the department, is it that 467 number, or what is the, because the where it comes to total budgetary change, it's blank. I mean, it's like an alarm, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up. Okay. Is it 467 or is it 423?
So while we're pulling it up, you know, I would say I would concur with Legislator Walter's recollections and go a little further and say that when this came before us last year, there was a want to pull this out, and we had a discussion and debate and settled on using ARPA funds to fund it the first year. I haven't seen the analysis that was promised. I know that we talked about standing up a one department or two departments, small departments at the time. I spoke with the executive's office suggesting veterans and office for the aging and really getting the specifics, you know, testing it on two departments, and providing us the backup and the explanation. There was a discussion about really being able to get granular for legislators to know, you know, what calls came in from
their specific constituency, not by name, not giving away anything unless they wanted to, but just what type of calls were coming in and what the concerns were in our district. If that presentation has happened, I'm not aware of it. I don't know where it's happened because I haven't seen it.
We got maps that just had a number on each town, correct? Of how many phone calls they got?
Yeah, not really broken down into what they were for.
Yeah, so,
I mean, I think it's fair to say that in general, we haven't gotten a detailed new update on what this division is doing. So that has been, certainly lacking. You know, absent just cutting it and absent a presentation, I mean, we would need really an explanation. We need a justification to keep it, I would say, is more than eight, right? So that's, we're kind of back where we were at the last budget cycle.
Right.
I would just add to that the biggest part of constituent services is also closing the loop and knowing that the people got to the services or got it remedied. So the fact that we didn't even get close to even knowing that part. So I guess what I would wonder is whether you'd be willing that in this same amendment we actually add those two care management positions into DSS.
Oh, I mean, I would
take these out and put those two in. Yeah. I do believe in Health, Human Services, and Housing. We were told that he could absolutely use them, and I believe that would potentially cover 80% of what this was envisioned to cover. I think that if if other departments like roads and bridges, if they don't have a way of knowing that people have problems with the roads or that there are, we do need a mechanism for them to know. And if there is no mechanism, that should be its own conversation of how do people let the county know that there is a giant pothole. This is an expensive mechanism to know that. I have the feeling you could just call and you could find that out. That's like, oh, great, now we know. It's a little different than I can't feed my whole family or we're about to be homeless. I mean, that's where you want to connect people to actual services, make sure they get those services, as opposed to just, by the way, there's a hole in the highway. And so that would be my request.
Okay.
Chair Brookhouse.
Disregard, I lost my train of thought.
Legislator Cahill?
Yeah, so I guess my question would be, we were promised reports on how this was going to take place, which we haven't seen. And secondly, are the departments still getting direct calls, right? Because the department numbers are still in the directory. And if you have a problem with DPW, you're going to call DPW. If you have a DSS issue, you're going to go to DSS. So has this really, propagated across the county where people in the county would say, well, oh, no, I got to call the call center constituent service number. I haven't seen any promotion to use that, for one thing, right? And we were, as I recall, we were told we were going to be, given the ticket numbers that were in our districts and the resolution of those ticket numbers, right?
And they were going to follow up and close.
And I haven't seen any of that. So, short of gutting this and throwing it out the window, I would at least like to see some data behind what the effectiveness of this constituent service center is right now. Thank you.
Comptroller Gallagher?
Yes, I just wanted to bring it to the committee's attention that we have an audit out to management for comment in this area, and we're hoping to have comments back from them early next week and to be able to release the report publicly.
That would be thank you.
So the data will be included in that. Okay.
Legislator Ron?
Thanks. I mean, that was I think it was Legislator Cahill's, comment, was one of my concerns about this in the beginning in last year's budget cycle when it was proposed is, each department has a set of administrative assistants or confidential secretaries that are taking calls. We're not eliminating them, we're just adding a new layer. And, if this is going to take the place of them, then this is going to take the place of them. Otherwise, you're just spending more for essentially the same amount of contacts. You're just putting them in a different place.
So, I just want to speak to this. You're talking about four employees that work in this department. Two of them are CSEA employees. As a taxpayer, I'm not going to get into whether the service is needed or not needed. I don't know the amount of calls they get or don't get. But the legislature approved this department, and over the course of the last, you know, 9-10 months, the county has been building this department, training the employees to operate in this capacity. So I don't know if the ledge thinks that you approve the budget in January 1, you're taking calls and everything's going. That's, you know, this is something that over the course of a year had to be put together, trained, and put in place. Now, I don't know the volume of calls. I don't know if there's reports. I don't know if the reports are coming. My suggestion is rather than, you know, create positions that you don't know who's going to fill, why not at least partially continue this department for, you know, at least half of the next year to get some of the answers to these questions you're seeking. And if you're not happy then, make your adjustments then, rather than in 3 weeks, four people have to figure out what they're going to do for employment, and now you're going to create two positions that you don't even know what they are at this point. It just seems like you're not happy with an outcome, but investigate what's actually happened before you make a jump decision to just cut four people. That's my only suggestion.
Chair Bartels.
So, several things. I want to speak to what Mr. Ball just said, but I want to ask a question of Legislator Walter, and that was the two positions that you're talking about in social services. Those you're describing potentially two new positions that are not connected to this, correct? Okay, I just wanted to be clear. I know they're theoretically connected, but I'm saying there are two new positions in social services that would have job descriptions that would be different. Okay, so to some of what Mr. Ball just brought up, you know, this was contemplated by the legislature as a one-year endeavor. That's why it was funded with ARPA money, and it was strictly spoken about needing to hit benchmarks and to report back. And that hasn't happened to a satisfactory level. I'm not right now at this moment. I'm not today ready to cut it. I'm very glad to know that there is an audit coming out in a timely manner, albeit tight, for us to actually look at the numbers of the things that we're talking about. But this whole department began with severe legislative skepticism. We're way on the record with that. So,
I don't doubt that. My concern is I don't know that the four employees weren't sold some goods and not knowing that this was a one-year deal.
Well, and this goes back to this goes back to the earlier discussion, you know, on the creation of a different position about the idea of sunsetting. But, you know, the human aspect of this is always very tough. But on the flip side, if we've got a division, and the evidence remains to be presented, but if we've got a division that's not performing to the expectation of the legislature, which was based on, you know, we didn't create it. It was based on a selling point. In fact, at the point of last year's budget, the legislature was fully ready to cut this, as I recall it, in its entirety before its inception, basically. And very, very late, there was a scrambling, and we had a full presentation on what it was we were being asked to support. And we understood at that time that there was going to be, that it was going to involve a ramp up, that what was expected wasn't going to start out the gate, which is why at that time, again, I'm on the record and otherwise said, you know, separately, to executive administration, start with two small departments, come back with the evidence of what you're trying to do. In the absence of that happening, we have very little to go on, other than anecdotal evidence, which I'm sure each of us can point to constituent complaints about the difficulty to reach people at the county level. So this I would say it's fair to say that this hasn't alleviated that. Like, there's no aha moment to legislator Cahill's point about the rollout. I could be totally wrong, but if I were to canvass, you know, 600 of my constituents and say, do you know the one call-in number for the county? Like, do you know the county has a constituent service center and we've got a number that you can call? I'd be lucky to find one who knew that number readily. So the rollout hasn't happened in a way that, and that's in part maybe because we're not ready to get all the calls to it. But the point is, we have got zero information to go on. So I appreciate this being brought up for discussion, but I think we're really gonna, there'll be a lot to learn from, I hope, from the comptroller's report, because an audit usually includes numbers and details and facts, and so that's what we're going to be backed up by. I certainly respect your need to protect
I cannot disagree with anything you've said. And in fact, I agree with just about everything you said. I think that you're a few weeks at this point away from the end of the year with a new budget taking effect, where you don't have all the answers. And, you know, so I think what I'm saying is, what's the harm in partially funding it into the new year, maybe not for the whole year, and make a decision later in the year just on that issue? And if you decide to amend and do some cut moving into 2023, do it after you have all the information, not only where these four employees are going to fall, but is the department functioning the way it should to the satisfaction or not? And I don't think you're going to have that answer, quite honestly, regardless of what they try to show you. I don't think you're going to truly have that answer within the next few weeks.
Let's say, Walter.
I think I have the answer. I mean, so historically, what happened, the longer part of the story was, we were in a pandemic. And during the pandemic, people were calling the county office insanely. They were panicked. They didn't know what to do. They were just bombarding the county office. So then, when we were faced with this budget last year, one of the things the executive office recognized was that those calls, that was kind of tapering down. But they had hired people to handle all of this COVID response, and they were doing exactly what you're saying, but a year ago, saying, well, we've got to figure out what to do with these people because we hired them when we had to respond to COVID being insane. And now COVID, less people are calling because of that. We have a vaccine, so we need to do something. We're sort of shifting our focus. And so as ARPA, by default, I mean, if you think about with grants, it was always understood this was going to be a 1 year, and during that year is when it was the responsibility of the executive's office to show us that this was valuable. So it's their responsibility to know that as the year came to the end, we would need to know whether it was worth this trial continuing. And so, it's not really on us. The fact is the evidence of its lack of success is in the lack of the evidence. You know, we were never shown, look, this is working, look, this is making a difference. The things we have been shown, or I was probably alone being shown because I requested it, were insufficient. They never resolved all of the things that we had said, okay, we're hoping this is what it's going to provide. But it was, again, always understood. Now, whether it didn't get communicated to the people who are in it that this was a one-year trial, that's not on us. I would hope it would be so that they understood that they needed to also deliver us the data that we needed to have. But, again, it's not on us that all of the deliverables that were promised to us this year were not delivered. And so I don't need to wait to see that's the answer. They didn't provide it. As far as these two other positions, it's not like I don't understand. We have care navigators or case managers in DSS already. We have the job descriptions. We know we need to have, they need a couple more of them. So it's not like just pulling these jobs out of a hat. But again, This was ARPA funding. This was for 1 year with the expectation. It's also ridiculous to use ARPA money for anything that, you know, ARPA is supposed to be a one and done kind of thing. Every project is supposed to be, this is the funding and then it needs to take care of itself. And so it would also be necessary that the executive's office show us, how does this now take care of itself without ARPA money? How does this have this relevancy? So again, I don't want to take responsibility for not seeing the evidence as, you know, reason to delay this process. That was the expectation. The executive office did not give it to us. So there's no reason for us to continue the program.
So there's actually more of a backstory. It's kind of sort of the way it happened, but these people that took these positions resigned other county jobs that they held because they were being told that they were having these positions. So they resigned their positions.
But those positions also closed because it was the COVID response team, and then that COVID response team shifted.
No.
Okay. Well, whether they were from the COVID response team or there was a COVID czar.
They were on a voluntary basis. They were voluntarily filling a need for the county, and they were sold a bill of goods to resign their other positions to take these positions permanently.
Understood.
And but now you're going to cut their positions.
We've made it clear from the beginning that this was a grant-funded project.
Right, but not to that.
That's not
But the bill of goods, if it was sold, is not by us. It's exactly. Not their point.
But you guys are the ones that are potentially cutting their legs out now.
But we said these exact words publicly in these meetings.
Yeah, let me just interject for a second and say that this is Groundhog Day again. This is exactly the conversation we had last year. We needed justification, and not only did we give the positions and put it into the budget, but I don't remember the exact number, but I know there was quite a hefty budget for advertising to be put out there. I remember losing my mind over the amount of money that we were planning on spending, wrapping buses, billboards, the radio spots. I mean, it was just incredible the amount of money we were going to spend for this, and I haven't seen any results from it either. So, Legislator Cahill.
So just to square this up with Mr. Ball over there, October 3rd, the budget was released. October 7th, we had a press release from the executive's office that Ulster County launched its new website for government services 4 days after the budget, which is a full 9 months into the year, right? So, you know, from where we sit, you know, this was something that was promised and not delivered.
I don't disagree with that point.
So we understand that, you know, people may have been sold a bill of goods that, you know, this was something that would be there for them, but they never came to us and asked us, right? I mean, October 7th, they launched the website for something that was funded in 2021, rather, right? That's not on us. That is not on the legislature. We asked for this when we put that funding in the budget, and it didn't happen.
Chair Bird.
Legislator Cahill pretty much said what I said. I mean, all of our conversations have been on the record and transparent, you know, and the fact that this was moved, that this division was moved to ARPA funding was the subject, I'm sure it was even covered in the press, was the subject of significant debate. And the whole reason that it was moved to ARPA funding was because the discussion happened that ARPA funding was temporary and that this was we were creating a temporary thing that was going to need to prove itself in order to continue. Again, you know, I look forward to the comptroller's audit. You know, maybe when we see the numbers, we'll all say, okay, we stand corrected. But absent that, it's a serious decision. We're in charge of the finances of this county, you know, and that's, if a division is underperforming, particularly one that was created with very specific expectations and milestones to meet, then, you know, we're tasked with making those difficult decisions.
Okay. Thank you.
The next one is budget amendment number 36, and this involves the Constituent Services Navigator Department as well. And you know, I would like to say it was ARPA fund. It's now been absorbed into IS. I had thought that this was supposed to sunset at some point. It was a temporary department, and yet they were getting raises. Since there are, four and three of them are union?
Two of them are union.
So all three of them are union?
Three of them are union members.
So we can't.
Two are under CSN.
It's the staff association.
Okay, so then we cannot not give them COLA.
Those three.
Okay.
The three. But the one is fine.
But the one that's listed, we can. Okay,
correct.
Thank you. So the non-union position, I am proposing that they do not get the COLA.
The manager? Is that why they're...
Yeah. And again, it's because it was supposed to be temporary. They're not supposed to be employees, so to speak. We have positions that we are creating. There's already been 42 new positions put into this budget. I am just looking at bringing this budget in where it's realistic. And next year, when we really start feeling the impacts of inflation and that happened, oh, I turned it off, and the housing bubble burst, that we're able to, you know, make this a real budget.
Chair Martels?
Well, I appreciate that. What I think you're trying to do, you can stop me, is to, like, cover all your bases. If the,
yes,
if the first resolution
fails,
then you go with this one. I would say that if the first resolution fails and the legislature deems it worthy to keep the division, then I think that this person should receive their increase. Because that would be, we the legislature would be signaling that we're making it permanent. So while I think we need to have a debate about the first resolution, this one for me is not a starter.
Okay.
Sorry, just to be clear, so this individual is in the first one?
Yes, okay. Yeah. So the first one is the whole department. The
right.
Second one, because this is the only non-union person, it would only impact management.
Seven.
So we'll discuss that one. 37. This one is to increase the capital projects budget for bus shelters from $250,000 to $500,000. We've had extensive conversations in transportation on how to improve our UCAT ridership. Part of that is to provide the public with a means to get out of the elements, even though bus shelters are open in the front. And it will also include signage. We do currently have contracts with municipalities for some bus shelters, but municipalities such as Marbletown do not have any. This also makes it a little bit safer for the public and gives them a transit point. And again, we want to promote shelters and signage to increase ridership, which will reduce our CO2 emissions,
right,
and also address an ongoing issue with our workforce and our tourism needs. Even when we get tourists up from the city, they don't recognize that they can't flag down a cab or hop on a bus that's going to be going by the regular time. So the shelters will have routes and schedules posted. And they'll be unified. We're not going to have the funky wooden ones that have POW on the side and people put their garbage in. They're all
Chair Bartels.
The same.
So a couple questions. Well, one, I really think that we do have to unify our bus shelters. I think
yes.
It's an important part. So do you know the per shelter cost, or have we spec'd that out yet?
Yeah, they're roughly between $8,000 and $10,000.
Okay.
Marlboro just got a couple, and that's what he said would be the price. There's also $25,000 in their budget this year. It's my understanding from a conversation that Legislator Erner had.
Is it in the capital plan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
$250,000
is in the capital.
It's just meant
in
the capital.
Yeah.
It's
capital.
Yeah. Well, it says 250. I don't know.
It's just a number.
One per person.
You need between two and four in each municipality. So the hope is to offer
So
can you just explain what the difference is? So the capital plan said how many, and this is how many more?
Can I just, got clarification. Yeah. The $250,000 in the capital plan is just for design. It doesn't even put one on the ground. So that's what that's why I'm curious. Like, I think, so it may be that this addition doesn't even do what you want. Doesn't even come close to covering what you want.
Can I clarify again what we're saying?
Does that mean taking existing ones and improving them, or just sitting there in a computer and figuring out what they all should look like?
Isn't it $25,000 for the design and $250,000 for the bus shelters?
I have $250,000 for design.
That is insane.
Imagine that we approved that.
Where is that kid who drew the sticker for the iPhone? I'm sure he could design it for a lot less than $250,000.
Yeah, I think
that is crazy.
I don't think we would agreed upon that. I think it has to be. I thought that that conversation was that we would actually see improved bus shelters, and that to me, what Legislator Petit's trying to do is have more improvement. Yeah.
And that
the existing bus that you were, because it even listed, this is where the existing ones, and we were going to improve upon the existing ones.
Yeah. Honestly, I would never approve $250,000 to design a bus shelter that you can buy off, you know, off of your standard DPW. I mean, that's where I looked up all the prices. And you get really nice ones that have heating and air in them for $15,000 or $20,000. But yeah, and they're all, you know, they're all unified. They all look the same. So when somebody comes up, they'll know it's a bus shelter, and we'll get the signage in there. I don't see where that was. So can we amend that?
Can I just read this?
That's what I thought the $25,000 was.
It says, the bus shelter, I'm skipping the first, whatever. The bus shelter capital project will work with an architectural firm to create a universal bus shelter that can be installed and maintained at the expense of the local municipality. In order to help ensure the safety of the residents and visitors of Ulster County in efforts to promote the use of public transportation, UCAT will utilize federal and state funds to develop architectural design options that will include solar power, LED display boards, and GPS AVL solutions. UCAT will utilize FTA and NYSDOT funds to cover 90% of the cost with a 10% local match. Now, I don't know if that is that last sentence related to the architectural design, or is that 90-10?
Tony's here.
Oh,
we just brought Tony in.
We're only
about the bus shelter capital project.
Okay.
The 250 that's in there.
So the 250 that's in the capital project is just for design only. So it's not for the purchasing of the bus shelter.
So there will be no scene improvements by the end of the entire capital program.
Right.
5 year.
That's great.
That's
great.
That's
great.
That's
great. Yeah, it's the design to come up with a program to build these shelters.
So can I just...
Yes, please.
Is the design a 90-10 match?
Is the design a 90-10 match as well? I think that funding goes through UCTC, and it would be probably an 80-10 match.
So it is.
Okay. And do we really expect it's going to cost $200,000? We don't need to debate it. It's 80-10-10 right now. But do we expect it's really going to cost $250,000? And what is the timeline, do you think, for the actual...
I think if it involves the entire county, that it probably would use up most of that.
Well, isn't the architectural design of the shelter, why would it... Like, it would be the same ones used in multiple places. It's not like you're designing...
So when we built the shelters for the city of Kingston, mm-hmm. depending on what areas you had to put them in, there's a lot involved. Like if you have to have the handicap accessible ones, whether you're going to go to the outsides or insides, so it can't be the same shelter everywhere. And then when we had to put the one on Academy Green, that's a historic, it's zoned historic, so we just couldn't put any shelter. It had to be approved by a panel. So I think that... Probably the design of each shelter in each community might go by what the community wants. So it's not going to be a universal one. Right.
So sorry, my back is to you, Tony. I would say, you know, given that, I'm supportive of keeping the design
at whatever the department wants to put in, being, you know, recognizing that it's 80-10-10 and that it might involve some detail in each community. I would say right now that my major comment to the department would be just that through Legislator Petit and just knowing other members that there's an urgency to get this done, that we in the legislature would want to see this expedited and bumped up when we talk. I'm going to talk a lot about the capital plan when I get up there, that this would be one that we want to really make sure that we're bumping up to the top and making happen. And then I would be resistant to putting money into the following years yet, because I don't want to signal what I think we're willing, what we want to spend until the design comes back. So I think it's realistic that it's going to be a year until we start seeing these mobilized, but that we'd like to see it happen as fast as possible, and if it gets done sooner, then we get them out there.
But if it gets done sooner, will we have the funding if we don't put it in or into a different capital project?
Can I answer that? Yeah. Yes, we will, because this is a capital plan, so we can amend the capital plan at any time. Yeah. If this gets done in March and we have an estimate of what it's going to cost, we can amend the capital plan to put the funding, create the capital project, and fund it. We can do all of that. We do that all the time. And I think it's very clear that this legislature has that commitment.
And just to follow up on that, Deputy Executive Kelly at the, not this last week's meeting, but the meeting before. Sorry, just got to get closer. Deputy Executive Kelly said that there's only been so much bandwidth they could do to get projects done a certain number a year. I don't know where his office.
Yeah.
Well, we need to prioritize then, I guess, between that. We've got the Emergency Operations Center. There's a whole host of things. This would need to be put into that priority list because it may not even be accomplished in 23. It might be a 24 project, and Chair Bertels is right. That's a capital plan. It's not an actual fund. That's your Walter.
Yeah. So I'm still a little flummoxed here. So for $250,000, it's because you're saying, I have two questions. One is, so you're saying, well, we'll have to go to New Paltz and create a design for New Paltz because of what it has there. And then we'll have to go to Marlboro and see what Marlboro needs. So there'll be all these different designs on paper. But nothing, just to clarify once again, nothing would actually happen to those existing shelters in that 250. Just a plan on paper saying this is what we should do to that particular one, and that the thought is they're so different that there just have to be so many different designs done.
Correct.
So I did not read it this way, and I guess what really confuses me is the capital plan shoots out, even though it kind of shifts each year and shoots out another 5 years, if a capital plan is shooting out for 5 years, why on earth would it not include the actual building of these shelters? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why would we stop at a design? Why do the design? If the capital plan, which plans for 5 years in advance, doesn't actually include the changing of the shelters. So I get that it's just for 1 year, but when we approve these capital plans, we say, we have it, it's called bus shelters, and it's a 5-year projection, and usually what it has is, this is the design stage, this is the implementation stage, and it might be that one happens in 2023, one happens in 2024, but I kind of support this idea now, recognizing, like, I thought that this was, you know, there's only so many shelters that actually have an existing structure. Those are the ones that we're going to focus on, and that's it. And that I thought at the end of the year, we'd see those structures all different. And that's what I agreed to. But if that's not at all what it was, that's fine. I hear it. I'll just have to trust that it takes that much money to design it. But I just still don't understand why we then don't have the capital plan saying, and then in 2024, we're going to build those, and here's the money. Like, why wouldn't we set that out in our plan?
Legislator Cahill.
Thank you. So, you know, I hear you. I'm right there with you on this. And the thing that we have to understand fully is that each municipality that where these are cited has to approve whatever we suggest they are. So and this is my understanding of how this was working, was this design was to bring something to these municipalities and say, this is our idea. We'd like to put this type of bus shelter in your community. Please take a look at it. And then we work on the funding of how that happens after we come up with the design, which included solar power and potentially, you know, electronic schedules being posted within them, you know, some sort of agreement with the municipality to maintain them, because some of them are disgusting, right? You know, and you know, the ones at the college, the folks at Peyton, they just dump crap in them to leave, right? You know, and it happens at Tech City as well, that we're the ones there are just not maintained well. They're maintained much, much better now than they were with the prior owner. But, you know, we have to also consider that that's part of it. Where these shelters are placed, we have to have agreement from the municipality. And they may have issues like what Director Rozier said earlier, was that, you know, the municipality has a requirement. It says if you're putting on a cabinet green, it has to go through our historical society. If it's going in a greenway somewhere, we might have to understand that there's limitations as to what we can do there as well. So I fully expect that $250,000 to be absorbed very easily in the design of something that may be, you know, used across the entire, every municipality in the county. And when it comes to the capital project, we're talking big bucks here. This is not going to be something that, you know, is going to be a couple of $100,000. These things are going to be expensive. As we expand our public transportation system in the county, right, there are going to be big dollar signs associated with that. We have 3 buses now, and if we're doing it right, those things will fill up. And as they fill up, we're going to need to enhance our services around those, right? So, you know, this is just, I think, a very, you know, infant step to the beginning of what this system can be down the road in 5 or 10 years. And this is just the first step in getting there for the shelters, right? There's going to be a lot more expenses associated with this as we go forward. One of the reasons why I worry about spending all this money this year on the budget anyway. Right?
Can I just respond to that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that. But on the other side, what is the point of doing any design if they're not actually getting built?
Yes.
And so I feel like us committing, and, you know, this is a capital plan. We're not putting the money there. It's a capital plan. We're saying, oh, and then next year and then the year after we'll do it. But to not commit some level of county money saying, we're not just going to work with municipalities to do this, but somehow we recognize they have to get built. And now maybe there's different grants, maybe there's different municipalities participating and giving input. By setting money aside for the building, we're not giving away the power. Like, we're not saying what we have to offer. We're not making promises. We're basically saying that we're committed to actually helping these truly exist. Because I would never want to spend, I would hate that we would go 2 years from now, we've spent $250,000 to design these beautiful, beautiful new shelters, and no new shelter exists. And so I kind of agree, like, even if we put some money and we might change it, or we might up it, or we might whatever, a whole idea of a 5-year capital plan is saying, where we have what is our true vision for these in 5 years as far as what the county's part is. And I just feel like it's, unless we don't think that the county will have any contribution to it after the plan, I mean, if that's what we're confident of, is that that's where we stop. We make the plan and we definitely will do nothing more, then I'd say, fine, I get it. I mean, I think it sounds terrible. But if there's actually something we may do after, I don't understand in a 5-year plan why it wouldn't be a yes.
Chair Berta.
Well, so first of all, and the capital plan, I have a lot to say about it. But capital plan isn't a commitment, and it is not a contribution. It's neither of those things. So the first answer to why we wouldn't is that we don't know what that number is. And guessing is, I just think, not smart, but also because it transmits what we might pay, if we're going to guess very high, but also we're saying that we're putting in the capital plan the money for the study. We're asking the department to prioritize. We're telling the department we expect to see the budget amendment actually creating the capital. And once we have once that study gets done and we have a number, we're going to amend the capital for 2023 to have X amount of dollars, whatever the end result of that study is. It might be $300,000. It might be $7 million. We don't know. Like, that's what we're going to do. And then we're going to say, okay, it's more than we thought. It's $7 million, so maybe it isn't something we do fully in 2023. Maybe something that we do a part in 2023, a part in 2024, a part in 2025. Right now, we don't have the information. It's just like
the Reuse Innovation Center. We don't have this, we don't have the design back to tell us how much to put in the capital. We have the intent to put it in the capital, but I don't think it's, I mean, you would literally be asking for a number out of the air to apply to 23, 24, 25 right now, just a number. And yeah. What's the benefit of that?
Well, let's look at the Veterans Cemetery. We had the first step was design, and then we put in money to
That's
do
a bad
it.
Thing to look at.
Well, but the point is, we do that all the time. We say we have to do the design stage, and then we have to
I would argue we do it, we in some ways do it poorly all the time by making these estimates that we either fall way short of or we go way over.
I agree.
So,
I say
like so here is an example where we can actually, well, let's not say we, for me, where I could actually like walk the walk and say like, yeah, I believe in this. I'm 100% behind it. This one arguably is done the right way. There's money for the design, and then we're going to fill out the rest once we have a number, which is going to be soon. We have a department head here. We're saying we want it to be this year. We want this expedited. We want to see this as, I'm splitting the difference. We want to see this as soon as is feasibly possible. As soon as you can come to us with an amendment to both the capital plan and the budget to create the capital, this legislature wants to see it. January, February. Like, make it happen as soon as you physically can. That's what we're saying.
I also want to add for the design. Once you design the shelters, you can present them to the towns or the communities, and they can decide do they want to chip in and buy them, or what we did in the city of Kingston prior to that is we approached an advertising agency approached us. They purchased the shelters and sold them themselves.
Strongly that we've gone beyond
they sold the advertising. We got a smaller amount of the advertising fees on them, but the city contracted to maintain them. The advertising agency purchased them, and then they sold the advertising on them with our approval, and they received a larger amount of the advertising royalties, or whatever you want to call it, than the city did.
I get that, but what happens if there is no other money? Like, let's just say that there isn't.
We budgeted.
Yeah.
We put it in our capital plan.
I understand, but I guess to me...
And then we budgeted.
Part of having it in the five-year plan is seeing that it is our intention to assure that these are built and not just designed. And I guess that's where I lose it. Now, I know that the numbers are wrong, and I know that they... I don't know why things are miscalculated, and we have to make those amendments all the time, but... The thing I don't mind about that process is at least suggest like we're not just designing it, we're also going to build it. And I just feel like everything else I've seen in the capital plan has a design element and a completion element.
Not the reuse innovation.
And I'll say that when I agreed with this one, I assumed I was, for that amount, I did not quite get that. And now I hear it and I trust it. I mean, I don't know what money is. At $250,000, that's just like blah. But that's what I was assuming, is we're going to have these like really cool shelters. So I guess to me, it's like I agreed showing that I had the commitment to have them done. And so for whatever that price is, I agreed with the commitment that they would be done. If it turns out that, you know, that the design, I also don't want the design to suggest that we should have each one cost $1 million. So having some sense of where we're, a commitment of paying for it also helps define the design of saying, okay, well, within reason, so that each one is not exceedingly expensive. If other money comes in, that's great, and we can adjust it or we can use that money, but I just feel like it doesn't represent my commitment that the bus shelters are built.
All right, let's try to tighten up the conversation. Legislator Rock is right. They try with budget amendments itself and not policy issues. And what's that? No, he came over here. He walked over. He's right.
I mean, he didn't walk and walk up.
Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. I mean, Legislator Nolan, go ahead. But.
So a possible solution, if it's legal to do it this way, would be to take the total amount we think should go to this initially, maybe $250,000. All of that for design seems way high to me.
Yeah.
And but if we put it in as 50 for design and 200 for construction, if we ran short on design, we could pull from construction, and we could be saying we're going to do at least this much on both bus shelters.
Yeah. Let me just go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, we our conversations in Public Works and transportation have been for a unified, equitable transportation system. And we've even talked about the buses all looking different. So it does concern me that we take $250,000 for this Cadillac dream of having, you know, tie-dye bus centers in Woodstock and tugboats in Esopus. You know, you're going to have people coming up from the city who don't understand what we're doing. You know, a bus shelter is a bus shelter, and they look really nice, they'll keep people dry. We don't have them now, and we don't have enough of them. And that's what I thought that this budget line actually was. So,
can I just clarify, just so people know, I mean, the way the real world works when it comes to design and projects is you do the phase one design, and that sometimes your project actually comes to fruition, and sometimes on a phase one, you determine that the cost of doing it is going to be so high that you're not willing to pull the trigger, and you have some costs that, unfortunately, it's just part of doing business, and you lose out on it. I think that's what we're doing here, and I agree, this is the right way to be doing this, not putting money in and giving a number for the bidders to know what we're willing to pay for this, because we don't know. And we may have to, which we don't do very often, or at least since I've never seen us do it, say that, you know what, it was a great idea, the design looks nice, we just can't afford to do this, and we're just going to have to scrap the project. We do. So far, we haven't done it that I'm aware of, but that's the way private sector works, at least. Sure it does.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, when we talk about the high cost of this design, which, again, we don't have to get way into it because it's in the capital and 8, 10, 10, so, but when you talk about the them being design specific for the towns, I didn't understand you to mean a tugboat and a Esopus and a tie-dye. And I'm assuming it has to do with like local planning, local right. approval, local site plans, local that. That's
well,
like
you have to place them so you need
might
so
be
many.
More challenging.
Right, we wanted to put one in front of Kingston Hospital. The sidewalks aren't big enough, so there's different. Rules and regulations that go into placing the bus shelters. You can't just put them wherever you want.
And you're anticipating that the estimate of $250,000 for design would take in that type of detail on a municipality by municipality basis?
I would think that could be in your scope of work.
Yeah.
You do the design process to ask them that, because you can't just decide, oh, I'm going to put a bus shelter on the side of the road, or
which, if I may, I mean, what's being proposed, whether it costs $250,000 or ideally less, but again, we know it's an 80-10-10 split, when it gets to that level of detail, actually is a little more work on the front end in terms of design, but means that once the design is finished, it's already involved a certain amount of discussion with municipalities, certain amount of preparation regarding placement, and it puts us much closer to actualizing in the next phase, especially if, as you suggest, Legislator Petit, that maybe some of these are ready to be purchased, like not custom, we could build off that, who knows. So, you know, I do think that this is the right way to go. I think that this does not mean that we don't have a commitment to building them. And I also think, you know, I think this capital plan is so highly problematic. I mean, I brought my one from 16 to 21, just as a comparison, which Amber has right now. And, you know, I think we need to think about a lot of things with the capital plans. We need to think about about creating a way to prioritize within our capital plan. We need to think about the kinds of things that you're talking about, showing intention, maybe not in the regular breakout of the 5-year, but some other section of the capital plan. I don't know what that model looks like, but I actually think this one is correct as it is, but I just want to say to Legislator Petit that I 100% support the investment in actually getting these actualized, and it's good, you know, it's going to be on us through our committees and et cetera to keep communicating to the executive's office and the department just how high a priority we hold this and making sure that the design phase happens quickly.
Can I just get one clarification?
just because it's in my memory, specifically, I thought it said that it was only in where existing shelters were at this point. Is that not true? Because when we asked about how many would be proposed, I thought there was something about it being that this first stage was to was based on where existing shelters were. Is that wrong?
No, it just the background.
If I may, the background in the Capitol just speaks to the current system and 26 fixed routes and talking about where there. It says that there is currently no infrastructure provided for riders as they waited for the bus to arrive. No consistent identifiers, but this the detail of the project has to do with the design.
Okay, but the design is intended to go to every municipality, whether or not they have an existing structure.
That would be my choice, yes. I'm for having bus shelters for the public that
I just don't want to limit, like, so if a municipality does not currently have a shelter, they wouldn't be left out of this design stage.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you. 38.
38 was presented yesterday. Do I need to go over?
No, anybody? No. 39.
39 is a follow-up to 38, against a department that sunsets, so I'm asking that the 2.5 COLA is not included in the 2023 budget.
Okay. 40.
This one is a technical amendment, number 40. Upon the adoption of resolution 541.
Sorry, microphone.
Okay. Capital project number 604. We're increasing it to $1 million. This is for water and sewer infrastructure. I do have another one for water and sewer infrastructure too. As you know, housing has been an important issue, and if we're going to get housing into our communities, we need to provide the infrastructure for the developers to come in and do it.
Yep.
So the resolution number 40. Okay, so you're going from five, you're adding $1 million to it?
No, I am adding
$1 million.
Okay. And do we know how many have we gotten? I'm sure the arts division has gotten, I haven't seen it lately, but how many they're starting to write these awards now. Do we know if there's any unexpended funds and if there were any requests that weren't filled?
Well, that was brought up for discussion yesterday, and we were told that we did have it. We don't. There was one supervisor, Tano Warsing, who said he did just receive a check for his septic system. What was it?
It was a water district extension.
Water district extension. So that did go out. We were told at the ARPA meeting that out of 15 municipalities, there are 12 or 13 projects that were going to be okay. And then that's it. And that's only one project. What we're saying was mentioning three or four. So, and towns like the town of Rochester don't have water infrastructure at all. So, I don't know if you want me to kind of mush the two together. One is available funding so that we can have a second round for a water and sewer.
So that's 40, right? So
yes.
Can I ask that we... to the clerks, can I ask that we just ask for a one sheet of the awards on this? And this is proposing using ARPA fund for it? ARPA fund?
Yeah. Okay, number 41?
Let's say no.
My recollection is that a similar proposal was brought to the ARPA committee. Did not result in a suggestion to go forward with it. This being brought here, I was just not sure what our process then is for weighing against other proposals that are in the wings, whereas that committee structure provides for that opportunity. So I'm not the most knowledgeable on that, but it is my recollection that it did come up there.
Yeah, Chair Barton.
Yeah, that's why I just raised my hand almost exactly as Legislator Nolan first spoke. I mean, I just would say that I'm, my instinct is not to be supportive of it for that reason. I, you know, we have the ARB committee, and that they're weighing the remaining balance, and that would be the place to take it. Even if you brought it once, and I don't know if you brought it at an additional million or if you brought it at a different number, but even if you brought it back again, I think that would be the appropriate place. You know, there's several projects at various stages of development, and there's also several projects that have been approved that may not end up expending the full funding. So I think that's the place to have the conversation, right. Not in the
which is why we were looking into phase two. The projects, I think we were told, are averaging about $368,000 each. So there will be a small amount left over.
So I'm just saying, I think that the committee structure is the way to go specifically with ARP, since we have a committee that's directed toward ARPA.
Okay, thank you. 42?
41?
Or 41, sorry.
So this is a capital project again to remove the affordable housing and create a water and sewer infrastructure. If I recollect correctly, in the capital fund, it was mentioning again Golden Hill and the Enterprise Drive. If we're really looking at housing, we need to, and this is public money, it should be going into municipalities so that they can expand and create more of a water and sewer infrastructure within their towns so we can get more housing built there. We've had, I believe it was Town Supervisor Quigley say that at their supervisors' meetings there had been two supervisors saying they had developers pull out. One was in Gardner, and one was in the town of Rochester, because they realized after going through a good portion of the process that there was no water and sewer, and you can't put 80 to 100 units on a well. Maybe you can, but...
Can't. Chair Barton.
Yes.
My proposals are going to intersect with this, but just as a point of information, there is in the capital
the community
development fund.
That was minimal, though.
It's a million a year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a million a year. So that already...
Which
that
may
is,
be enough for two or three projects.
But that's what... But I'm just saying that's created for water and sewer. So you're creating a separate... You're creating $6 million for water and sewer by...
Yes.
Because there's $1 million already in the capital, and then she's proposing $5 million a year. So $6 million a year.
All right, fair enough.
Right, because the community one wasn't just water and sewer. That had a slightly different definition as well.
It says matching funds for infrastructure investments such as water and sewer to assist economic development and housing projects, community services facilities such as health and public facilities. The result, I mean, it says it's for... That's literally what it says. Infrastructure investments such as water and sewer to assist economic development and housing projects. Community service facilities.
Sorry, I thought we were still on 40. That's where I got confused. Yeah, 41 too. So.
Forty-two. Okay. This may be the easiest one, if nothing else. It gets through. I'm looking at 41. And originally my proposal was 5% cutting the budget across the board. Even though it's not raising taxes, we're pulling money out of a reserve. And we're going to be creating more positions, more departments, which I truly believe are needed. We need those grant writers. We need the EMT department. But I worry about pulling it from a reserve. We should be at a net zero. So this 0.97% would cover the 3.6 million that we're taking from those reserves right now, which may be a little bit higher if all of these other positions are approved. So I may be amending this to go up slightly. But that's what the intent of this one is. It's to ask every department within the county to cut back.
That's right.
so that we're at a net zero. We're not moving money out of any of the other lines. I mean, I don't want to be in that legislature where we're the ones that had to increase our tax base by 29 to 30% because we were keeping it even. At some point, it's got to go up.
Okay.
40. That's it. I'm done.
Nope, you have 43.
I have one. Which son of a gun. Okay. So this position, all right, number 43. This position is an assistant deputy to the county executive. It has been formally, there was a leave of absence taken 4 months ago. Prior to that, there was about 2 months of vacation and sick time. So the position has been empty about 6 or 7 months, which gives me some pause as to why it's needed there. Yesterday we heard that there was a proposed amendment to move somebody out of the budget finance office into, or to be physically in the executive's office, so they will have another warm body there. But again, if these positions are empty, they shouldn't be in our budget.
Chair Bartelson.
I just wanted to clarify that the proposal yesterday, which was the one that I brought forward, wasn't to move a body anywhere. It was just to move the budget line from finance to the executive's office.
Oh, I thought you were physically moving somebody from finance to... Okay.
No. And the executive's office has said they're going to get back to me with an analysis of the amount of work that the person does in the executive's office versus in the finance division, but that position was a position that was part of Legislator Archer's proposal to correctly reflect in the budget the executive office, so it doesn't have to do with actually moving any person or changing. I'm not suggesting changing any duties or changing any personnel. It's just a budgetary reflection. It's almost like a technical
amendment.
So the timeline here is July, and we just have an election, and so we'll see somebody here from the executive's office, but my understanding is that the idea was not to fill a position during a time when it was expected that there would be a new executive who might have, you know, that it would be a courtesy, at the least, to have a position that is waiting for that person to bring in staff. So I would like to have further discussion, you know, and see if I'm misreading that, but I don't think this is a vacant position because there's not a need. I think it's a vacant position because there was a higher need to let the incoming executive make this choice and have this position available. So I would oppose taking it away at this point.
Okay, thank you. All right, Laura, you're good, thank you.
Thank you.
Did 44 last night, Joe, that one. Chair Bartels?
Talk about those positions. Sorry. So you have three different proposals for these two positions. This is proposed amendment number 45, and what it contemplates. I went back. So the history of this position, which I could pull in front of me, there was a time there were two assistant deputy county executives, and one of the assistant deputy county executives was an attorney, who we were told that the legislature were told that position, that attorney, was doing some attorney work in the role, and we were asked to approve an increase in the salary to that one position, which was the history of why the two positions were at different salaries. I asked for a breakdown, and I could provide it to everyone as backup of the history of those two positions. Subsequently,
as we know, we maintained a higher salary even after the person left the position to become the county attorney, and the position was filled with a non-attorney. We had a discussion about it at that time, and felt that that person was bringing a lot. We've had a back and forth about it. So basically, what I've given, that both positions are vacant and have gone through much transition, I ask that we go back to the lower salary and apply all the COLA raises that were given. There were years where management did not get increases, but we applied all the relevant management raises, and that's what gets us to the 79,392 for the two positions.
So are either one of these positions vacant at this particular time?
They're both vacant.
So I strongly recommend that we do that. If they're vacant, then we have no obligation to keep the salary without the adjustments over the years to anything greater than what we agreed to initially when the positions were approved, right? So, yeah, I'm good with that.
Thank you.
Next one. All right, so my next series, we can kind of probably take them together. 46 is Joe. Oh, no. So the next one, actually, I have to change. I spoke with the Board of Elections, and the salary, as we discussed, I said that I was going to be bringing the salary changes in the budget, was approved by the executive, it's recommended by the executive, so it's just the title change.
You're on 47?
I'm on 47, yeah. Okay. That was quick. Taking up time.
Address 46?
What did you say?
Did you address
it? It was yesterday.
That was Joe. Tourism with Joe's. And it was
yesterday.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was in the list of Bartels.
That's okay. No, I know. I stopped and was like, I don't know. Doesn't look familiar. Okay. So, the next series, my next three, are what I am going to ask for a change to one of them. And maybe bring more. I just would like to take a second and talk about the capital program. So, as I mentioned and began yesterday, this capital program concerns me, gave me pause. It's significantly larger than our average annual spend, and while I realize it is a projection of our intentions, and albeit we pass it as a whole, knowing that we might not support each individual project, through the ARPA process, we've included a lot of non-capital programs in the capital program. And the main reason for doing that was for an ease in budgeting, to allow for multi-year budgeting. Given that, now we have before us a series of proposals that really really are attached to assignments of unrestricted fund balance. And I would say that's the case with the affordable housing, the community development, and I didn't include it, but would be open to including it in the open space program. What's interesting about the open space program, which I strongly support, is it's been in the budget for a long time, but just we've never funded it. And, you know, I ask us as a body to think about that, the fact that, you know, year over year over year, going back many years, I'd have to go back to look, but at least to 2016, because I have that program with me, we've had something like an open space fund that's never been brought to fruition. And that means that either the executive's office has never actualized the idea to bring it to us for approval, or we haven't created a policy for approval, and therefore it just stays and it gets pushed out. I think that we need to challenge ourselves and come up with a mechanism this year to, with the capital plan, to work with the executive's office to come up with a priority listing, and that's basically in legislative proposal. Why I said you know, I would see this as a very high priority, the one that the bus project, because the reality is, it's not reasonable to expect that we would move every one of the 2023 proposals in the capital plan. It's not financially feasible in terms of, I'd love to ask the finance department to give a best estimate of what the debt service, if we were to actually do all of the proposed 2023 projects, let's run it out, 2023, 2024, 2025, 2026, let's run them out as if we're bonding for them all at today's rates, let's just pick today, and see what that's going to do to the budget, because it'd be a non-starter. And also I would say that we actually functionally just can't do it. Even some of these things, even $5 million a year for housing, I'm not sure that we have the bandwidth to do it. Not to mention that we've heard that everything that we might want to do related to housing might not be eligible for capital projects, might not be bondable, we don't have a bondable interest, it might not, right now it doesn't meet the our stated goals. So while I'm asking to remove these from the capital budget, it's an attempt to actually start to write the capital program, not the capital budget, the capital program. And in housing, which I'll talk about since it's right here, in housing, it's in part because we have a parallel thing happening with Legislator Buchetel's proposal, which he's sending back to committee to make some changes. And all of that is to say, as in the earlier debate, that, you know, I would argue it, we would be better served to come up with the policy we want to see, come up with a plan or expect it from the executive's office, and then amend the capital program to include it, instead of what's become this giant wish list. I think that there may be a place where we could put into a capital program our best intentions, where we could signal things that we're looking at and we'd like to see, but not fund them in years like 23, 24, 25, especially knowing that we might not actually do it. You know, I am going to be bringing forward amendments next month as it relates to fund balance, including an increase to the tax stabilization fund. So we do, you know, we have a significant amount of unallocated reserves. I also will be bringing forward amendments to the fund balance policy so that we're handling, it's not, but we will be, our fund balance policy, if approved, would be to, rather than unallocated funds, would be to unrestricted funds. So all of these things, it's a lot to do in a very short amount of time. So these are my broad strokes, these three. The one that stands out and needs to be handled separately, and I'd be happy to entertain all of them, and I may be adding the open space, but once we have a proposal and a plan. With transportation, I have spoken with the director of planning about the transportation, because when I saw it, you know, I tried to do the backtrack to find out when it started to appear in the capital program, which isn't this year, it appeared in the capital program before, but I couldn't find the very first start of it. And again, my impression through that conversation is that it was put into the capital program for budgeting purposes, because it's like it's an 18-month process and requires some accounting to roll over. When I told the director of planning that I wanted to take it out of the capital plan in an attempt to start to address these issues, I said I would put it into his budget, which is what's before you, and he said, just take it out. And so when I talked to him today, he said, don't put it in my budget. I have the money in the budget to deal with it in the coming year. And if for some reason he doesn't, then we'll take that up. So basically what I'm asking to do, the amendment to proposed amendment number 50 would be changed to just have the first half removing the capital, not putting it into transportation's operating. Sorry,
Mr. Cahill. Speech.
Oh, that's great. So, on a, as you said, on a much broader topic here. So, I think a lot of these capital projects or programs, whatever we're going to call them, right, are the result of having a budget surplus. It's really a once-in-a-lifetime event, right? And so you and I have discussed this briefly about utilizing reserve funds within the budget to allocate some of that money into those reserve funds to show that we do have a commitment to doing things like housing and infrastructure and open space and other items that may come up, you know, as we discuss as a legislature, but to maybe instead of trying to put that money there, bring it that way, but actually put it in a reserve fund for down the road a little bit, right? I mean, we absolutely need to do something with the tax stabilization fund. I think that's vital. You and I were here in 2008 when our sales tax revenue went down. I don't know what the percentage was, but I think it was around $8 or $9 million, right? And that was significant back then in those days, you know, not like today where we throw $10 million around like it's nothing, right? But back then it was a big deal. And so I'm very concerned that that's going to happen again. I mean, quite frankly, it is going to happen again, you know, and when is really the question. So we are flush with cash right now, right? But we've been getting warnings from the comptroller for months that you shouldn't be too happy with that, and you shouldn't be throwing that money around like it's always going to be there, because it's not. And I agree. So, you know, my thing is, you know, why can't we introduce reserve funds into the budget, fund them or not fund them each year, but have them in there permanently? And so then if we do come into a situation like this year where we have excess, you know, tax receipts, where we can say, okay, look, we know with all the work that we want to do with public transportation, for example, we're going to have to spend probably millions on bus shelters. So let's put a reserve fund for that. We know we're going to do it. Rather than have to bond at all or bond less and reduce the expense over the long term, I mean, rather than just burn the money, right, or put it in a fund that we know that projects will come along and say, oh, you know, like Legislator Maloney always says, you know, it's got the right words in it, so everybody's going to jump on it and do it, right? But we really should be a little bit more pragmatic, in my opinion, and look at a much longer term than we're looking at right now. I mean, 5 years is great, but I'm concerned about 10 years, you know, where we're going to have these greater expenses and maybe not have the money coming in that we have now, right?
So, we, under the Hine administration, the year that we created the tax stabilization fund, he discussed and he presented in the budget the idea of an infrastructure, I think it was called an infrastructure reserve fund or an infrastructure, something related to infrastructure, right? So an infrastructure investment fund. That's morphed, the best I can tell, into what the administration is calling a capital reserve fund. Capital reserve funds, and someone can stop me if I'm wrong, are authorized under general municipal law, and they're restricted. What we call the capital reserve fund is not a restricted fund, and we could contemplate creating a capital reserve fund as a restricted fund. There are two types. One is specific. It's for a specific project, and one is a more general type. Buildings or any bridges, I don't know, a variety of infrastructure possible. Our attorneys right now are looking at the limitations of those restrictions, what those restrictions mean in terms of both utilizing the funds and also closing out the fund if we didn't use it and also adding money into the fund. But I think obviously, the fact that they're looking at it, I think it's a worthy discussion. For tax stabilization, I can tell you that it's going to be increased via resolution. That's the way it's done. So next month, I'll be putting in the resolution. I'm determining what the number that I'm going to propose for discussion. I can tell you that the base number I'm going to propose is the amount by which we're reducing taxes. I'm contemplating the amount by which we're reducing taxes plus the amount of fund balance that we're utilizing. That could potentially change if Legislator Petit's resolution passes, then we wouldn't be utilizing any fund balance to balance the budget. So both of those, I think we do need to talk about. We should also look into other available funds. One that I would like to discuss in a larger group and feel very strongly about is the Solid Waste Facilities Reserve Fund. It's a fund that's created specifically to be utilized for solid waste facilities, and we need to make a commitment in that regard. So now's the time to talk about it while we have money. I agree with you. You know, we need to protect against a downturn. Having all this money sitting in unrestricted fund balance isn't the way to do it, nor is it to make assignments and just act as if there's never going to be a downturn. So, but I'm ready to commit to many of these projects and these proposals. I think they're worth the open space, the matching funds, and housing proposals. But I really feel like we should have proposals in front of us rather than allocating the money, assigning the money, or saying we're going to assign the money without even knowing what we're going to do. And the reason I think we should take it out of capital is that they may not even be capital projects. Can I bring up one thing that I didn't have, but I just I think I'm good. So one thing there are actually two. Sorry, both amendments that aren't before you, but one of them Legislator Walter reminded me of yesterday, and that is our budget analyst recommended that we adjust our sales tax revenue estimate. I didn't put in an amendment for it, but I do think before we meet to vote on this, we should have discussions, or we should consider it. I'm going to ask that we draft something and I get it circulated so that we can have the conversation about it in a public setting, because I think it's worthy of discussion based on both expectations and trends. And I see that many of our neighboring counties are taking more conservative tax in terms of those estimates. And then the other thing I want to say that I didn't bring up, and again, there's so many things that we so much we have to do in a very short amount of time with this budget, and that is this: the issue of titles, right? So the charter is explicit that the legislature is the one who creates titles, right? So we have this debate internally about changing titles outside of the budget, but I want to actually say that using the budget to change titles is also a problem. So I'd like to pose two things. One, I would like to bring forward a policy that addresses this uniformly, including in the budget, requiring that the legislature give separate approval for any title change. Again, this, we're not talking about negotiated titles, these are management titles. Any title change that happens both either outside of, or if it's proposed to be inside budget, that it has to be a separate approval. But I would say, as far as this budget, and I'll commit to you, I've already asked Amber and Natalie to look at it, you know, I noticed that there are multiple places where there are changes in titles that correspond with significant increases in salary. Once Amber and Natalie get the document together, I'll circulate it to the entire committee or the entire legislature even, because I do think that we want to think very seriously about that, particularly at this moment in time. We're headed into a new administration with a new executive, so I don't know that says to me it's not just about a raise, it's a reorganization. So happening 1 month before we get a new executive seems the wrong time. I would be much more inclined to keep things, absent a very, very good reason for the change, to, if it's a title change that is associated with a raise, to keep it at the current salary. Again, I'm talking management, keep it at the current salary and the current title until the new executive has the opportunity to assess the situation.
Commissioner Golick? Bert?
No.
You good?
Thank you.
So just to clarify, there you're looking through and finding examples of title changes in the 2023 budget. I agree. One of the things, and I don't know, there's not really the wording of a policy for this, but, you know, in my short tenure here, what the consistency is they, if someone gets moved into a position and with an old title, sometimes it's just giving them the position and giving them that salary, but what seems to happen a lot is they're moved into a position and then we're told it was never the right title. They're doing this and now this should be. And so we're in this awkward situation because now the person's already been in that position doing it, but with the wrong title, and yet this new title has a better salary. And if there's a way that this policy also can address that element of the fact that when that happens, it becomes even harder for us because then we're saying this human being who is doing a job and is not getting paid accordingly, potentially, it should. And so we always feel like our hands is forced because it's like, oh, no, they're not an accountant, actually. They're this person. And we just called it accountant, and now we're going to call it this. But they're already there, and they're already doing it. And so I don't know what that language is and how to get there, but I think that if there is any way we can identify a way to reduce that kind of thing from happening, like that even moving someone from a position without the title change, if it's a substantial change in what they're doing and you're holding the old, that we should know about that too, I guess.
No, it's an excellent point and one we've run up against over and over, and it's probably the right place to handle it would be in the same policy. It's just going to be figuring out the nuance of how we do that. I don't know the answer right now, but yes, I think it's a good point. That's it for me for now, but obviously that would just want to see more from me. Sorry.
Thank you. Does anybody have anything else? Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Wow, I was the last one. Yeah,
could
Jim do it
yesterday? Yeah. Is that a motion to adjourn? Yeah, that's Kayla's motion to adjourn. Second.
Wait, hold on. She's got another amendment. She's doing.
No, I don't have another. But did he do historically over budgeted accounts? I don't recall hearing that. Can we even? Was that going to be wrong too, or no?
No.
Thank you,
Ren. Ken left.
Okay, so I don't know.
Can I just speak briefly on that? My concern with some of this, the major decreases in this have to do with DSS, where if we're looking at historical data, the last few years have been down in the program area because of COVID. We are starting to see an uptick in some of those programs. One of the decreases is MMIS. I don't know what the 52-week share will be starting April 1st. So I just make that point to the committee.
What page is that one on?
What I'm looking at is page...
Oh, MMIS.
Yeah, the page 20, the last page of his amendment.
No, but I need a page in the budget. So
I'm sorry, yeah. Page 411 in the budget, but it starts with even the daycare block grants. I mean, these are all programs within DSS where... Yes, the revenue's been reduced too, but the fear is the program is, you know, the costs are starting to uptick when it comes to the numbers of social services.
Can I unfortunately wasn't in the room when this was presented yesterday.
It wasn't.
Just
I'm just bringing
it.
Up a concern.
No. But when Legislator Maloney,
he never talked about that one.
He just said he was going to, and he just said there's a bunch of amendments he's putting in. And
that, well, I'm going to ask my question anyway. You know, I imagine sometimes there's a lot of reasons why something's over budgeted. Often it's that you can't fill these positions. Like there's positions that are there that you budgeted for and had the desire to fill them, but they didn't. As opposed to, you know, I wonder how many, I would imagine a lot of these, but how many of these are because of unfilled positions?
There's no payroll here.
These are all
contractual expenses.
Oh, okay.
And I'm focused, like I said, there's $10 million in expenses here, but I'm just looking at the big variances when it comes to DSS programs, and that's a big concern of mine.
Was this in response to the CMA analysis?
I don't know.
Okay. I guess we can't talk about it without a sense.
Yes.
No.
All right. And a motion to adjourn from Legislative KO. Can I get a second?
Tell them we're not meeting tomorrow.
What? Oh, yeah. Well, we're not meeting tomorrow, so enjoy. All right. Second, Legislative Walter. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you all.